Because Facebook isn't creepy enough. Apparently, people have been getting messages asking them, are you concerned that someone you know is becoming an extremist? Get support. There's also messages that say things like, Kevin, you may have been exposed to harmful extremist content recently. And they're warning people that nefarious actors are trying to manipulate you, to manipulate your anger and your rage. And you must click the get support button because only Mark Zuckerberg knows how to make you feel better. Well, we're going to talk a whole lot about censorship, extremism, and where that's bringing us because, well, it's all we really can talk about these days because of the censorship. You see, joining us today is a scientist, PhD, pathologist, Dr. Chris Martinson.
Hi, it's good to be here.
You are an expert on many things scientific, including vaccines and, you know, testing, laboratory work, and medications. That's fair to say, correct?
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time in and around labs, test tubes, pipettes.
So the question everyone is dying to know, you know, these very, very important questions. What do you like most about Joe Biden?
Mostly every time they trot him out, I can only think elder abuse. You're not the first person.
I like his strength and his zeal and his patriotic fervor.
Yes.
Yes, truly one of the greatest presidents of all time. And a bit aside, there's a lot that we're going to talk about in the members podcast at timcast.com. And it's really serious stuff. You got a PhD. I mean, but that doesn't matter. I mean, people in the chat already, when they saw that your name was in the title, they're like, all right, this is banned.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're going to be very, very careful. We're going to have a nice, fun, family-friendly critique of censorship and these big tech companies and Dr. Fauci. And then over at TimCast.com, we'll get real, real serious with what we can. So, you know, bear with us. We'll have some fun for this next couple of hours as we normally do. And then we're going to, you know, have a lightning in a bottle for TimCast.com. But thanks for coming.
Thanks. It's good to be here. And this is a little bit, I am kind of toxic, you know. So my first video out to the world about coronavirus was January 23rd, 2020. By February 5th, my wiki page, which had been up for 12 years, got yanked.
They deleted it. 12 years you had a Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
You're this PhD pathologist. You've got a YouTube channel as well.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of followers.
Yep.
Not notable anymore, though.
I was a non-notable person, according to Wikipedia. They said, well, this guy, yeah, he was a scientist, but what has he done lately? And, of course, this is some editor who maybe graduated high school, maybe not. We don't know, right? It's just some anonymous person claiming that I don't have scientific cred because they said so. But, yeah, that was just within less than 3 weeks after I said, hey, there's this thing coming out of China. Because remember, let's rewind. That was back when the media was all like, it's just the flu, bro, right?
And YouTube actually censored me for even bringing it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's really weird how this thing has progressed, especially with censorship. But we'll get into this. We'll start with this first story. So thanks for being here. We got Ian chilling.
Thank you, Tim. Yeah, man. Ian crossing up in the house. Chris, awesome to see you again, man. And you have a lot of experience with, like, regenerative farming. I don't know. Do you have, like, hands-on experience with farming and stuff?
Well, I have a farm. So I'm practicing. I'm bad at it, but I'm getting better.
What's your farm like?
Well, we got 3 cows. We got about 30 chickens. We're getting a couple of pigs when I get back this week.
So you would say you have a veritable chicken city.
I do. Yes. We have little baby chickens because we've got the rooster. But don't get the rooster. Okay.
We got a rooster. He's been screaming his mouth.
Just
up.
Makes noise.
You know what's funny is every time I walk up, he looks at me and then he mounts one of the chickens.
Whoa.
Like, because I think
that's a power move.
It is. No, I think it actually is. Because he only does it when I go up there, and they know that I'm the one who goes in, and I'm the boss, and I'm the one who always, you know, shoos him out of the way. And yeah. So he's like, hey, yo, look at me. He jumps on a chicken.
You've raised those chickens well because they're real nice to me now. If I get near them, they come up to me, and they're really excited to see me. It's a great feeling.
We'll talk about chickens and farming and censorship. We got Lydia as well.
Politics of Chicken City notwithstanding. I'm also here. These chickens are very cute and enjoyable. They'll come up and try to bop you with their beak. Mm-hmm. But we should probably get to talking about stuff.
All right. Enough chickens.
Here's what you got to do, my friends. You got to go to TimCast.com and become a member because I think, you know, Ian mentioned what someone hit you up and they were like, can you just do an hour less of the main show and an hour more of the bonus show where we get real dark?
I would love to. I love just letting loose, man.
I think there may come a time where we have to consider like some episodes like something like this. We might have to reduce the amount of time for this instance. We'll just keep it like we normally do. But, I mean, I was thinking about this before we even got started with the show. I'm like going off the checklist, things of like, we'll get banned for that, we'll get banned for that, we'll get banned for that, we'll get banned for that. Why are we even doing a show on this platform? Well, there's a lot of people who we need to like let them know where to find these conversations. So it's like, if we just stop going on YouTube, a lot of people would be confused and lost. One of the things that really helped, we started changing the name of the members only podcasts. And all of a sudden now everyone's like, I can find it now. It was so hard for me to find. Mm. And so I'm trying to balance that we have, you know, we get hundreds of thousands of people who watch these episodes every night. And how do I inform every single person? I could go on Twitter. I could tweet. People don't see it. So we'll do the show to the best of our abilities, but we can talk about a lot. We can talk about censorship. We can talk about comments made by Fauci, why we don't like the guy. And then we can talk about scientific expertise and a lot of the stuff that YouTube doesn't allow us to over at timcast.com. So again, I will also add, check the alpha for the new site.
Oh yeah.
Everyone's morale just like went through the roof. Yes. It looks amazing. We're super excited. We are going to be launching the Mysteries podcast soon, which is excellent. Shane has another article up right now, actually. Let me see if I can pull it up right here. There we go. Shane Cashman. The Pentagon sees a balloon. So this is a long story talking about saucers, UFOs, and breaking things down. It's really, really incredible stuff. So you want to check this out. And that's going to be part of a new podcast as well. So that being said, let's talk about how these creepy jerks are making it difficult for us to have real conversations.
Hmm.
PCMag.com says Facebook prods users who've been exposed to extremist content to get help. This is where it's getting weird. It's getting real. It's getting weird. Look at this. Are you concerned that someone you know is becoming an extremist? We care about preventing extremism on Facebook. Others in your situation have received confidential support. The other one says, Kevin, you may have been exposed to harmful extremist content recently. Violent groups try to manipulate your anger and disappointment. You can take action now to protect yourself and others. All right. You can take action. Everybody listening, you can take action right now. You can smash the like button, subscribe, and share this video.
Oh.
That way people can get a non-corporate opinion on why this is creepy and freaky. Just think about
that. That would be a peaceful action, though, of course, right?
Very, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very, very peaceful, yeah, pressing very peaceful. That like button.
Peaceful smashing.
Yeah, that's the big conundrum about these networks. Everyone's like, why don't you get off YouTube? And it's like, bro, we upload to Rumble now. We're uploading to Rumble. Mm-hmm. Not that it's perfect. We've always uploaded. Have we? I don't think IRL is on Minds, but my personal context has always been on Minds. IRL is on Minds. Yeah, we want to, and we want to make sure we're leveraging the networks as they exist to the best of our abilities so we can keep the network alive. Think of it this way. The way I said it before is like, do you retreat from a battlefield where you're still holding some ground just because you're like, that battlefield is completely open? Mm. It's like, not necessarily. Mm. Hold the ground you can. And so there's a lot of things we can't talk about, and it's getting worse. I'm texting some of these other big podcast people right now, and I'm like, yo, what's going on? Like, there's breaking news. We can't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I email Google, and I'm like, hey, look at this story. And they're like, well, you know, and I'm, all right, can't say these things. That's insane. That's how bad and broken this is.
I've noticed, I think our presence here is helping guide the YouTube behavior and, like, terms a little bit, because I noticed they relax their swearing measurements, and they're like, you know what? Go for it. If you want to cuss, feel free. Because it's like, it's just so entertaining. And if we start cussing, it's hilarious. And they know that, and they want it to be hilarious.
So. I don't think that's us.
Well, sure it is.
I think so.
But let's talk about this Facebook thing. Because I just want to look at this. They say confidential support. Who do you think at Facebook is going to be the person that will reach out to you when you're like, help, help, I've seen a post from Ben Shapiro.
Oh, no.
Like a psychiatrist that they hired?
It's going to be some woke 20-year-old.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, to be completely honest, it's going to be like some 20-year-old college student from India.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No joke. I mean, outsourcing call center stuff, you're going to get someone who's, you know, probably got a checklist of like, do you feel like you are sad and depressed? No.
Okay.
Right. Did Ben Shapiro touch you in any way?
No. Okay. Emotionally. Well, when you said exposed, I was thinking, I don't know, is this about my uncle or what is this about? You know, what's going on here?
These social networks have like huge psychology departments to take care of their admins because the admins see such vile and vicious things as they're going through, like making sure like blown off arms or like horrific stuff. So I wonder if they're using those same therapists to help now, but I don't know.
It's
kind of vague.
I mean, I don't know what they expect to get out of this other than creeping people out, but I want to show you this meme from Carrie Wedler. It says, are you concerned that someone you know is becoming an extremist? We care about preventing extremism on Facebook. Others in your situation have received confidential support. And then, of course, there's Obi-Wan Kenobi says, well, of course I know him. He's me. Yes, we've all been exposed to this content, but define extremist.
Sure. Well, about
political
what?
Dissident.
Yeah, when I first saw this, I thought for sure that it was about Black Lives Matter and Antifa, but of course I was not correct. Of course they're only talking about the right-wing extremism that they say is the biggest threat. Obviously it should be BLM and Antifa, but it's not. And I feel like this is a flex from Facebook. They're just like, oh, we're just going to show them what we can do. We're watching you. We can see what you're looking at. We can see what you're liking.
It's creepy. It's absolutely super creepy, of course. And it's kind of like that old definition of, you know, what's porn, and the Supreme Court justice said, well, I know it when I see it, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to be one of these things, right?
We can't operate that way.
No, we can't.
Like, you need to be able to define what you're talking about.
Right. So I've been searching my brain. I'm like thinking, when was the last time in history it was awesome when censorship showed up? Like, like, when did that work out real well? Was that the Nazi book burnings?
So, well, so the thing, U.S. Office of Censorship.
When did, so
World War II. Loose lips sink ships.
Yeah, but, you know, if you're talking about OPSEC, that might be just a little bit different from saying I'm going to talk about a scientific paper, which somebody disapproves of, right? It's a very different beast. So what I find interesting in this is that all, remember, I have this, I'm cursed with this memory. I can remember all the way back to the last election, right? Mm. Remember what there was all this concern, like Nazis, Nazis, Nazis. They were everywhere, right? So what are Nazis famous for? Well, I think they're really famous for marginalizing and, you know, shutting things down. Well, that's exactly the environment I feel like I'm living in right now. So
I've had
people call me up and say, Chris, you don't understand. This is exactly like what it was like when I was in Cuba, right when the whole revolution was going down. This is what it was like, this older guy, you know, during the Soviet times, right?
Have you heard about the parents in Loudoun County?
No.
Was it Loudoun County where that woman said it's just like the Culture Revolution or whatever?
Yeah, Chinese mother.
The struggle sessions? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that where we are?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's shocking that, you know, there was something I wanted to ask you about. You know, you were talking about vaccines. You were talking about efficacy. You were talking about medical treatments. What's your favorite color?
Blue.
Excellent. Wow. Ian.
Green.
Okay. Thanks, YouTube. It's been a blast. This is the kind of content you want on your platform.
Ha, ha, ha. Swear word.
I just learned that. I learned that green is in the middle of the human vision spectrum. So it made me think that maybe we developed the ability to see green first. And maybe that's because trees and grass are green. Magnesium and chlorophyll is green. So we just evolved to see that was the first color we started to notice.
Dude, I am fairly optimistic. I have to be honest. I was, you know, getting pretty pessimistic for a while. And then, you know, Michael Malice, who's a constant influence on this show, is very optimistic because he's always mocking and laughing at these people. Now, I do get some concern when he says things like, you know, look how dumb these people are. How could you possibly be worried about losing the culture war or something to that effect?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, zombies are dumb too, but sometimes the zombies take over.
They never stop.
Yeah, like, diligence. And they turn other people into zombies.
A lot of them.
That's also true. When you see the zombie like headbutting into a door and like just bouncing and they're like, look how dumb it is. And then 10,000 of them start marching towards you. You do get scared. But I am optimistic for a lot of reasons. As I've been saying recently, the night is always darkest before the dawn. Maybe it's bad right now, but look at the stuff we've been able to do over at timcast.com. We've hired a couple more writers. We've got a new editor coming on. We got new podcasts. I am confident that YouTube will be forced by the market to stop doing what they're doing. Or I'll say this, I really don't think it's going to be Republicans. They're gonna be like wagging their finger for the next 5 years. Nothing's gonna happen. Hmm. But I should say I don't believe 100% that the market is gonna force YouTube to change. But look at Joe Rogan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Joe Rogan left YouTube for the most part, took a deal with Spotify, and he was able to host Brett Weinstein and who's the other guy?
Pierre Coyle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we can't repeat what they said on that show.
But it is a great show, and I highly recommend everyone watch that show.
And the New York Times wrote a pseudo hit piece on Joe recently, mentioning the conversations they're having. Now, I'm not entirely convinced Spotify is happy with the conversations they're having, but he's got a deal, and they can't just ban him. So it allows... It's like Joe got himself locked into place on a platform that probably would have banned him if he did it independently. Joe being Joe, they probably would have loved it if he just went to Spotify. But if, for a channel like this, if we did the same show as Joe off of YouTube, Spotify would probably ban it. They had all those employees at Spotify trying to get Joe banned. But he's got this deal where he's like locked into place.
And he's got 11 million listeners. So,
yeah.
You know, what are they going to do? He's got more listeners than most, nearly all of mainstream media. So he's got power.
Is that the metric that's come out? 11 million listeners?
I think that's the last one I heard.
Because he has like 10 million subscribers on YouTube, or is it like 11 million subscribers? I'm wondering how many people still listen to him on Spotify, though.
I don't anymore.
Yeah. I haven't, no disrespect, like Joe's rad, consider him a friend. I haven't checked out, I haven't been able to see one of his shows. There was one instance where a show came up and I like tried pulling up Spotify to figure it out and I just like, I give up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a little barrier of entry.
I used to just pull up the thing on YouTube with no problem and I would have it like playing to my left while I'm like reading news and stuff and I just listen for a couple hours.
You know,
it's harder.
I have so much respect for Brett Weinstein, so I will go the distance for him and Joe, of course. But it really, because I was like you, I didn't get Spotify, I wouldn't get it. I was like, F this. But when you see these people, I mean, he's friends with some of the most influential and amazing humans on earth. Mm-hmm. So I'm going for that. And Spotify knows it. Their valuation after they paid Joe, whatever it was, 100 million or whatever, is up like billions of dollars.
I know, and I regretted not buying any of that stock because I'm pretty sure like a bunch of people knew that it was happening. And then, like, I didn't even think about it. And then instantly, as soon as they announced it in the press, it, like, skyrocketed. I'm like, weren't people talking about that behind the scenes? Like, didn't someone tell me something about that? I got to pay attention more to this stuff. I don't think that's insider trading, though. I have nothing to do with the business. Someone just mentioned, hey, I think this thing's going to happen. I'm like, I don't care.
All right, darkest before the dawn, though. I got to tell you, I know a lot of people have been canceled and censored just in the past 2 weeks.
It's getting worse.
Big stuff, right? So this woman who works for the FLCCC, Joyce, she writes this really big article called...
The FLCCC?
Oh, sorry, that's the Frontline COVID Critical Care Doctor. Okay. So that's Dr. Pierre Corey. So my first YouTube strike happened when I was reviewing his testimony. So he was in front of the Senate, had like 8 million views. I thought, this is safe. So I took his thing, I pulled three clips, just reacted to the three clips saying, hey, you should listen to what he's saying here. It makes sense. That was my first strike.
They gave you a strike. That was recently. They took down this guy's Senate testimony.
They did that too. But they gave me the strike for reviewing the testimony, right?
I wonder if they're going to get mad at us for mentioning the testimony at all. I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't think so. They might get mad, but it doesn't violate any terms to talk about banned content, as far as I know,
bro,
to reference it.
Bro, Crowder got a strike for mentioning CDC data. It's they don't care, man.
Exactly.
They are carpet bombing channels.
Yes.
And so people are like, Tim, why do you keep saying talk to your doctor so much? First and foremost, I genuinely believe a private doctor knows more than Rogan, Fauci, or anybody on TV. But also it's like when we do segments for this show, we do a 2-hour podcast. Of course, in the context of the live show, I'll say something like, it is my genuine opinion that, you know, your medical history to a private doctor, like your personal doctor, he's going to know what's better for you than anybody on TV or whatever. But then when we do another segment, because we break them up, that context has to be in it as well. Otherwise, we'll get banned. I'm not exaggerating. People like, so if we talk for 10 minutes and at the beginning of it, I say, make sure you go to your doctor. We make a clip where we're like, here's what Dr. Chris Martinson was saying. And it has to be included. YouTube specifically told me that. And then if we make another 10 to 15 minute segment, we're talking about something else. And as soon as it comes up, I have to say it. Otherwise, we get banned.
Okay. Well, it's good information, too. It's not just hyperbole. It's not just a show of faith. I mean, you really do want to talk to your personal doctor about your personal medical business.
I know. This is what Candace Owens was saying. Was like, why are people so dumb that they're going to like listen to a comedian and then take that as medical advice? People need to have some responsibility for their actions. And I'm that's a really good point. Like, the media gets mad at Joe Rogan for having an opinion on vaccines. And it's like, yeah, we do. It says a lot about our society that maybe it's just more about YouTube and their faith in humanity versus humanity in general. Like, if someone did a podcast where they said, I'm not even going to make a hypothetical because YouTube would get mad at me. But if someone said something like, you know, ride your bicycle backwards, it's fun. And then a bunch of people just went and did it and got hurt. YouTube genuinely believes people will watch people and like, they genuinely believe people will watch YouTube channels and then just instantly be like, I'm going to do everything they just did. Like without thinking about it. They all jumped off a bridge.
Well,
I will too.
Isn't that kind of the divide? So I trust the people who follow me to be intelligent and take responsibility. And they do. I trust them. YouTube has this other sort of patrician attitude, which is, listen, we know we can handle this information, but we're worried about other people, right? So it's this very sort of looking down that they believe that all these other people are going to do really dumb stuff. So remember way back when there was this whole thing, and I don't even know if I can say the word, but this woman gave this guy died from this fish tank cleaner, and they used it and used it and used it and used it. And then his buddies wrote and said, by the way, Bruce was a really careful guy. He was an engineer. He never would have spooned stuff in. And by the way, his wife was new and she was a complete raging, you know, bitch. And so they were a little worried that maybe something had happened because, you know, guys tend to, if they're going to off their partners, they do it violently and women choose poison. And so it's a very old story. And so there's a real story there that, that somebody could look at and the media just ran with it over and over and over again that that's the danger. This one case that this happened and
Trump
it's much
it.
More complicated than it's been presented.
Yeah. If Trump says something, it's got to be wrong and bad. There was something funny happened recently. Trump goes to the border, right? And Kamala Harris won't go to the border. She won't deal with immigration. Trump announces he's going to go there, and he did. And he had a press conference with Greg Abbott. And of course, then Kamala immediately is like, "Okay, I'm going." Apparently, she went to the wrong place. Like she went to somewhere that wasn't relevant necessarily.
Like 800 miles away. Yeah,
but
close.
I noticed someone noticed this on Twitter. They said, I think it was Politico put out Trump's having a very, very bad day. And they mentioned, like, I think the CFO from Trump Organization was indicted on, like, not paying taxes on benefits, which is the weirdest thing.
Taxes,
like,
man.
Yeah, but, like, this is such a slap on the wrist level offense. Usually they're just like, "Hey, you owe us $1 million," and they go, "Okay, here's your $1 million. Have a nice day." They actually indicted the guy for not paying taxes on his benefits. And so, anyway, you see this email come out saying Trump is having a really bad day, and it's like they're just lying in wait to say, if Trump does anything, we need to shut down that conversation before it could happen.
Mm-hmm.
So Trump supporters are watching, right?
We have this reoccurring conversation about leaders and followers and who's what and the danger of too many leaders, you know, but what I'm interested to hear what you think about, like, just the nature of humanity that we sort of segment into this one leader and a bunch of followers. And society, it's almost now that society thinks that they've just, like, this is how it's going to be. There's a bunch of people that are followers by nature. You can't change it. It's human nature. So we have to protect against that. You know, we've got these people at the top or whatever that are supposedly like trying to build a world around that concept. And what do you think about that?
Well, I'd be all for it. I would love to be able to relax into the idea that you have a good, competent leader out there, right? But I don't. I really honestly think our leadership right now is taking us in a direction that's horrifying. Every dimension I look at this, right? So the Federal Reserve is now printed. It has a balance sheet that's $8 trillion. Look at the price for cold rolled steel. Look at the price. I mean, we just have inflation raging, and all they can think to do is their precious stock market, they're going to keep throwing money in. It's the dumbest thing ever, right? And that's the leadership we have on the economic side. But I got to tell you, again, still, I look at what's happening ecologically around here in terms of species loss, particularly at the bottom of the food chain. One does not willingly lose the bottom of the food chain. We're losing insects, we're losing the birds. And, you know, it's going to be one of those things where you can't quite predict what's going to happen. People are like, "Oh, you know, you lose a few honeybees, we get some honeybees." But eventually you lose one too many species, and then the next thing you know, you have this mysterious brown mold going across your crops, and you don't know what's happening because there is something too complicated to understand. So our leadership is taking us down the wrong direction, but they have one unifying thing. If you can make money at it, it's an okay thing, right?
Regarding the bees, we talked a little bit about the bees dying and colony collapse disorder, and that it's linked to neonicotinoid pesticides.
Those things are the worst. I wrote about those in 2015, right? It was completely obvious what had happened back then. Everybody heard about maybe DDT and Silent Spring, Rachel Carson, Trace's book. We said, "Oh, never again." We learned our lesson. We didn't. We've created a worse thing with the neonicotinoids. First off, they don't just target the insect species you want. They're a biocide, not an insecticide. A single coating on a kernel will kill a bird. Second thing is, it has 1,000 life half days. So you're a farmer, you spray it on your field, 1,000 days later, half of it's still there. But you know, you farm every year. So you spray a little more in 365 days, and it's just now accumulating. To the point, I was standing under an apple tree I live in rural western Massachusetts. We live next to the largest contiguous wilderness area left in Massachusetts, 4 square miles. It's beautiful. And we had no bees. No bees this spring. No little ones, no big ones, no bumblebees, no honeybees, nothing.
I went outside earlier. We got a bunch of blackberry bushes everywhere, and they're called wineberries. I thought they were raspberries, but I guess they're wineberries. That's like an East Asian variant, which is invasive, whatever. And they're delicious. They're everywhere. But I went outside, and we got the little white flowers growing everywhere. There was like 1,000 bees, like bumblebees. Now, when I grew up, I was always like freaked out because I'm allergic. But it's yellow jackets you're worried about. Mm-hmm. I walked through a field of flowers and the bees, and the bees were chilling like my own
care.
Business. Yeah, they're chill.
Just don't step on them. They're totally happy.
They're good people, you know?
They are. They're very good.
They did their thing. I did my thing. They're helping make the berries come in and everything. And I found some pawpaw, too. I'm really excited about
that. Did you eat one?
That's cool.
No, they're not ready yet. They're tiny, but it's going to be really great. We're really excited for this. But anyway, back to the more serious topic.
There we go.
I've talked
to bad leadership. Yeah,
mm-hmm. I've talked. Last time you were on the show, you mentioned that like not just colony collapse disorder, but like insect populations in general have been on decline.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting when I talk to people who are in the more political space. Like you're a scientist, you know. Mm-hmm. I talk to people in the political space, and they're like, "Oh, all this climate change stuff, all this overpopulation stuff. It's not true. It's political." And I'm like, "I don't know. We had this guy on was talking about like I think you mentioned last time like ocean dead zones too, or did mm-hmm. I may have brought that up.
Yep.
But yeah, like what's your opinion on what's going on with the insect populations collapsing with that stuff? And we're deviating a little bit, but we'll rope things back. But I really want to hear your thoughts on this.
Well, thanks, because this is the core of what I do in the world is I'm trying to talk about that we're at a very unusual time in human history, not U.S. history, not Chinese history, not Indian history, just human. And we're at a point now where there isn't a spare continent, like there isn't an extra place to go, right? Even the WF crowd, the Davos crowd, they have the Great Reset, and they open with one of their slides. They say, by 2050, we're going to need three planets of resources, but we only have one. What are we going to do, right? So it's actually a major driver of politics, finance, you know, futures, hopes, dreams. So it's a big deal. But I like to drive things down to little anecdotes so that makes it easier to understand. So I'm reading these papers. These scientists have said, hey, all the salmon smelt are swimming upside down and falling and dying. It's not cool because we're trying to save the salmon, right? And they look into it and they find out that the salmon are missing thiamine, which is a B vitamin. Just, it's missing. So then they go scouring all over the world and it's missing from the oceans everywhere.
Whoa.
So how did we, humans, how do you mess up the thiamine cycle, right? It's crazy. I mean, you look, it's like there's all these science articles about it. That one thing alone, I'm like, we've done something that has damaged the ocean so severely that the fish can't reproduce, which means the birds can't eat. So oceanic bird population is down 70%, right? You push that to a point, we live in a complex ecological web, and we don't know, this is the dread, you don't know when that one thread snaps. And now it kicks into a new state of being, which we might not like. We might not find it so awesome. We don't know. But we should have a little humility and back up a tiny bit, I think.
So you're basically saying that a lot of this stuff's true. I mean, we've got, colony collapse disorder with the bees? And we need pollinators.
Badly.
And when you have a farm, a garden, or you've even got like wild fruits and vegetables growing, you really understand the importance of pollinators. So, I mentioned pawpaw, for instance. This is, they call it hillbilly banana. And it looks delicious. I think I've had it before a long time ago. It is very difficult to produce because you need two genetically distinct pawpaw trees very close to each other, and beetles have to pollinate, like so beetles and flies. So apparently people hang roadkill near the trees hoping that the flies will pollinate.
Ew.
It's just so crazy how some things are difficult. Now, that balance can get disrupted. But here's to rope all these things back together. You mentioned censorship. We talked a lot about that. You've been censored, but then you're also saying things that probably support a lot of these like UN agenda things, like Agenda 21 for a sustainable development, or Agenda 2030, which is the Sustainable Development Goals. We talked about that yesterday. It sounds kind of like you're in a way similar to Rorschach from Watchmen. Are you familiar?
Mm-mm.
So basically. The bad guy, Ozymandias, simulates an alien invasion so that it ends the Cold War because the U.S. and Soviet Union are about to blow each other up. By simulating the alien invasion, it stops the war from happening. They unify against this perceived alien threat. So he lies to the people of the world to stop them from this war. He's a smart guy, but... Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S.? With more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S., they have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Dr. Manhattan and all the heroes, they find out what he's doing. Dr. Manhattan, of course, is the only guy with real superpowers. Rorschach is a moral absolutist. So even though he understands what the bad guy did, actually saving the world with his evil plan, killing millions of people, he says, I'm still going to tell everyone anyway what's happening. And so I guess what I'm saying is, you know, last time you were on the show, you mentioned these things. A lot of people, you know, in the political space don't know about or disagree with. And you're actually making a case for why we need to curtail a lot of what's going on with fossil fuels and human mass production of petrochemicals and things like that. But then you're also coming out and telling everybody the truth about certain studies, things we can't mention right now. But we will mention at TimCast.com.
Can't wait.
Because it's like you're aware of what's going on. And I guess to put it simply, it sounds like you're more dedicated to the truth, you know?
I am. And you know, I like to add 1 + 1 today and get 2. And I'd like that to happen tomorrow as well.
Yeah,
I like consistency like
but
that.
But you know 2 + 2 = 5 now, so.
Well, that's the problem, right? And that's a derivative of how many genders we have, which is some
I think you're right.
Multiple. Yeah. That, right? Well, so I know these are difficult subjects and all that, but it does speak to this idea that we're at a critical crossroads, and the only way I can think to get through it is by being honest, unflinchingly honest with ourselves and being able to talk about things no matter how uncomfortable. So this censorship is coming at a bad time because it's saying we won't allow you to talk about stuff if it's going to like pinch pharma profits or whatever the story is, right?
Or their global agenda.
Or their global agenda. So in part of my work, I get to hang out with a lot of these very, very rich people. And I hate to tell you this, they're just people.
Yeah.
Right? They're not that much smarter. They think they are, but they're actually not. Right? So, this thing that we're in right now is a complex world. Here's the thing about complex systems. They have emergent behaviors, meaning you can't predict what they're going to do. You just can't. So they're going to have these wonderful plans, and they're going to try and like control everything, and they think they can control all of this down. But I think that's what got us into this trouble in the first place. We tried to control everything. Monsanto, Syngenta, they had a better pesticide. Let's just see if we can get this right. And you do that, and then nature says, oh, no, that was a bad idea.
Are you familiar with Frederick Bastiat?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not super familiar with him, but I just saw a meme. Who is he, real quick?
Maybe 1700s or so. He was an economist and a philosopher of sorts.
He has a great quote. If the natural tendencies of mankind are so bad that it is not safe to permit people to be free, how is it that the tendencies of these organizers are always good? Do not the legislators and their appointed agents also belong to the human race? Or do they believe that they themselves are made of a finer clay than the rest of mankind?
These world improvers. Wow. You got to watch out for them.
That quote right there is
great.
The perfect summary of things I've been saying about why I don't trust the authoritarianism. When Bill Gates gets up on that TED stage and he's like, you know, we've got 6.4 billion people on the planet and we're looking at 9 billion in the next 10 years with vaccines and reproductive health services and healthcare. We can lower that by maybe 10 to 15%. This becomes like a wild conspiracy theory where they're saying he wants to depopulate. What he's actually saying is population management to end poverty. Mm-hmm. That's the Reuters fact check official statement. And I'm just like, Bill Gates is not a super genius with a giant pulsating brain that makes him levitate and fly through the air. He's a guy. But he's a guy who figured out how to collect resources. Mm-hmm. That does not mean he knows how to manage the world. Mm-hmm. In fact, I would bet a large sum of money It's actually a good example of why he can't manage the world. His expertise is in a very specific location. How is he supposed to determine what works for billions of people? That quote put it perfectly.
I agree with that. I completely do. And again, they're just people. They're just people. And if we're going to sort of pop through this in any way, shape, or form using technology, which, you know, the Davos crowd loves that idea, the only thing I can imagine is that we actually put AI in charge of something because AI can manage actual complex things. But we might build this program and we're going to hate what it says because it's going to do something. It's going to say, beep, 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 you shouldn't grow cotton in Arizona desert. That's dumb.
No strawberries in New York in the winter.
Sorry, right?
No avocado toast in New York in the winter.
We're going to hate
Williamsburg
that.
Explodes right? Overnight.
Huge mess.
We're going to hate it. We're like, oh, scrap that. That's obviously dumb. You know?
That's the funny thing that I've been saying about a lot of these big cities. I see the cities as being the problem. And it's not rural conservatives mm-hmm. that are the problem. I mentioned the other day, people who live in rural areas, well water, which is a sustaining, self-sustaining cycle for the most part. Yeah. Some areas get stripped and there's problems, but typically if you live in the middle of nowhere, you got a mm-hmm. well, you don't got to worry about it. You have septic systems, which are also in to a great degree self-regulating, and if done properly, I could be wrong about this, but we've had, you know, because we're on a septic system. I had the guy who said, if you do it right, we never have to come back out.
Mm-hmm.
However, most people don't, because
that's like a paper towel on the toilet is doing it wrong kind of thing.
Yeah,
usually,
and plastics and cigarette butts and things like that. But you look at these cities, and they must have their strawberries in winter. And no matter how many times the climate change activists say things like, "Hey, we should stop eating out of season fruits," they themselves do it. Here, you know what my absolute favorite moment was? It came yesterday. Are you familiar with the Sunrise Movement?
Mm-hmm.
These are like the climate change activists. They're like, we got to save the planet. So last night in New York, there was a widespread alert. Everyone's got to shut off their AC and turn the power off because the consumption was overloading the grid and power was dropping out in certain areas. They said, stop unnecessary use of air conditioning. That's a fair point, to be honest. Some people don't realize this. Maybe you're in a two-bedroom apartment and you got AC on in a room you're not in. Well, why don't you turn it off, stay in one room, help alleviate some of the stress? The Sunrise Movement tweeted, what is unnecessary use of air conditioning? We're trying to survive this deadly heat wave. And I'm like, yo, you're the climate change.
It was 90.
But like, these are the climate change people arguing for the right to use air conditioning. In these cities, they concentrate all of the problems that they're complaining about, especially like police brutality. But you think about a septic system, which is in many ways self-regulating. What do the cities do? Gigantic sewer systems that dump the sewage into the ocean or the lakes. This is what blows my mind. Chicago. All of the cities surrounding the Lake Michigan are dumping sewage into the lake. Jeez. And it flows all right down to Chicago where everyone's got dancing around it and on the beaches.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the middle of nowhere, that's not happening.
So cities are these giant dissipative structures. It's just food and energy go pouring in and waste comes pouring out, which is cool as long as you have, you know, a lot of food and energy and stuff like that. But we're coming up in this period of time. It's going to get really awkward, right, where we don't have quite the energy we want to do all the things we want. And then we have to have those conversations about what we're going to do. The right time was when Jimmy Carter put his cardigan on and had a speech and said, maybe we should insulate our houses better. We were like, nah, let's not. That's OK. So now we have these excessive heating
Boomers.
And cooling costs, you know,
yep.
right? So if we were going to do this in an egalitarian way, I think we could come up with a currency, cryptocurrency, right? Tie it to a barrel of oil. So when it comes out of the ground, this currency is created and then it gets consumed when the oil gets used. So if Bill Gates wants to have a fleet of jets and 60 houses, he's going to have to figure out where to harvest those. He's going to have to buy them from me. And my price is going to be, he'll have to go out into the open market and get his fair share of those things, right? It's very hard to do.
This is exactly what I think is happening is, people like Bill Gates, he doesn't want everybody out of poverty. I don't think he really cares. Maybe it's some like fanciful, nebulous goal like, wouldn't it be great if people weren't in poverty? I think he's actually thinking like, wait, you mean because of all of these problems around the world, I've got to give up my jet? What if we get all of the people of the United States to stop flying? Can I fly then? Well, technically, okay, good. That's what they keep doing. They tell everybody else to sacrifice. They keep their private jets.
Mm-hmm.
I'm completely convinced that we cannot legislate or use politics to get out of this, because telling people to change does not make them change. Mm-hmm. You need to incentivize it with a better system that functions better, like the change, easier and more fun and more useful.
I think the problem is you've got evil people who lie, cheat, and steal to gain power.
That's definitely part of the problem.
And I think if we were allowed to have open and fair and honest conversations, we wouldn't be in this problem in the first place.
So look at, like, Bill Gates was on TV, like, constantly, right? They're asking him about the vaccine. What do you think, Bill? What do you think? The guy's got a bunch of money. By the way, I know people who've worked for him directly. He's a full-on sociopath, psychopath. Mm. He's not a great technologist, but he was very good at crushing his competition, right? So that's his genius. Great. So he made a pile of money. But why does that qualify him to suddenly be the world's expert on vaccines?
This was the best thing about the Rogan scandal. You call it a scandal, I guess.
Yeah.
When he gave his opinion on vaccines. You simultaneously had these articles where they're like, how dare Joe Rogan give advice? He's not a doctor. Bill Gates says, here's his advice on medical treatments. And then I tweeted about that and someone responded, because Bill Gates is saying what's in line with these organizations. And I'm like, then why not write the article saying CDC recommends instead of Bill Gates? You see the point?
Mm-hmm. And pay no attention to the fact that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation funds a lot of the same organizations that are saying the things that he's in alignment with, right? Their tentacles go far. They're I think they're like half the WHO's budget. They fund Gavi. They fund all these things.
I saw a really funny meme. It said, I'm not going to take advice from a guy who thinks population growth is a problem. Like, he's talking about how do we control the population, manage it properly. You see, this is the funny thing. This is how the media boxes people into the conspiracy theory bubble. Bill Gates gave a TED talk where he was talking about eliminating poverty. And he explained several things we need to do in order to achieve that. I like the idea of eliminating poverty, but poverty is relative. The only real way to eliminate poverty is communism, when you make everyone poor.
You eliminate wealth.
Exactly, exactly. If everyone's equally poor. But as long as there's someone who has more, there will be a poverty bracket. Now, in his speech, he said, the joke I made earlier where I did the silly voice, that, you know, we have 6.4 billion people. We're looking at 9 billion in the next several years. If we have, with vaccinations, healthcare, and reproductive health services, we can reduce that by about 10 to 15%. He was talking about out of control population growth. Reuters fact checked this and said, all of these people are conspiracy theorists who believe he's talking about culling humans. He's not. He's just saying we shouldn't have mass population growth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the official narrative then. Great. If the guy is publicly speaking about controlling the level of population and it is publicly accepted and fact checked that that's the case, then I don't think he cares about you as an individual. And that's why I say, talk to your own doctor, because the people who get advice from people like Bill Gates or a comedian for that matter are not getting proper advice. But the problem, Joe Rogan gets attacked. Mm-hmm. And what was Joe's immediate response? I'm a moron. Listen to Dr. Fauci. And I'm like, no. Fauci doesn't know anything about you. Like I said this the other day, like you got a lump on your butt and the doctor says, oh, I can't give you a treatment because of the lump on your butt. Fauci doesn't know about the lump on your butt, but you walk in front of a bar, get drunk, and then they give you a medical treatment.
Mm-hmm.
I say this too much, but you know, it's frustrating. It does bear repeating, but yeah, that's where we're at.
Well, in particular, what I don't like is how science has become religiified. It's become a religion for people.
And scientism.
Scientism. It's a great term for it. So Pope Fauci, you know, people like, oh, but Fauci said, as if it was an infallible thing. I've caught that guy in more misstatements, lies, and scientific errors. You know, it's a little hobby of mine. And I've been doing it for over a year. He's a wreck.
He's a TV doctor.
Yeah.
I understand.
When's the last time you saw a patient, do you think?
Hasn't it been 30 years? Was that they said?
At least. And the guy hasn't, like, picked up a scientific instrument. He's been a bureaucrat for 30 years. That's fine. Somebody can be smart and sit down and learn stuff. I get that. But people talk about him as if he really is the smartest guy out there. Do you know how hard it is to be a bureaucrat at his level? Do you know what his day is like? It's all emails and meetings and politics.
We saw his emails leak. We know all about that stuff. So I love that he comes out, you know, if they're criticizing me, they're criticizing science.
That was a bridge too far.
That's a bridge too far.
That was just, yeah.
He said it twice, too. He doubled down.
Yeah. I view him as a TV doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he's not Dr. Phil. But he's literally a guy who's not seeing patients, who's not currently in academia. He works for the government reviewing. What does he do? He reviews grants and, mm-hmm. and things like that. And then he goes on TV and gives his opinions. But he's not the guy in the lab. So when this all started happening last year, we saw his emails. Like, what did we see? He started asking people in labs, hey, what's going on with this? Was this one of ours? Can you give us advice? He didn't know. So I noticed this. Very early on, I was like, I like Fauci. He's all right. You know, he's doing his best. He's trying to tell us what he can. And then after a few instances where he would come out and give advice, I was like, now hold on a minute. What he just said, that was on CNN 2 days ago. He's just repeating what they said 2 days ago. Then when he contradicted himself, that's where I started to be like, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
The dude just waited 2 days after the news said something and then repeated it.
Yeah.
He's just, I love how they complain that Trump would be sitting in his, you know, chair watching Fox News, and then he would tweet what he saw on Fox News. I'm like, what do you think Fauci's doing? He's watching CNN, and then they ask him to come on and create this recursive loop where CNN says, here's what we're learning, and then Fauci goes, yeah, here's what we're learning. And the double masking thing was the perfect example of the recursive loop of non-science. He gets asked randomly, Now, doesn't it make sense that people wear two masks would be better off?
Yes, absolutely. Two masks would be common sense.
And then all of a sudden people start saying, Fauci says we should all wear two masks. So then he comes out and says, you don't need to be wearing two masks. And then all of a sudden the CDC announces, we're now recommending two masks. And then Fauci comes back out and says, you should probably be wearing two masks. And then they actually had this image. I can't remember what channel it was, CNN, where it's like three masks.
Mm-hmm.
And then the meme came out about like 12, 17, 20. That was the perfect example of the recursive loop of Fauci watches TV. It repeats, and then it's repeated in the press, and then it gets adopted politically. It's just...
It's not science if he does it. It's not science if anybody does it. And he also said at that same interview, he's like, I am science, right?
I am science.
Everything I did was scientifically backed up, right? But no, his first admonition for people not to wear masks, he admitted later, was a political calculation where they're saying, well, we didn't really have enough for the healthcare workers and the people, so we thought we'd sort of try and steer people away so we could preserve them. That's not a scientific decision. That's a political decision.
Let's break this down. He lied. Let me just express. He said, it came out later, I think it was like July of last year, he's like, well, we didn't have enough masks for all of our medical professionals, and they needed masks, so that was the advice we gave. However, and this is what he said, we didn't realize that people could spread COVID asymptomatically. So once we realized that, we reversed course and said, okay, no, you need to be wearing masks. Here's the problem.
So, listen.
Yeah. You don't need to go out and buy N95 masks. You don't need to go out and buy actual medical grade face masks. You could have wrapped a shirt around your face, and I've done it. Fauci could have come out immediately and said, look, if you've got a scarf or some cloth face covering, you might as well wear it. It'll help out.
So by March of 2020, there was this little shop in Southern California called the Sway Sew Shop. And these women start making these face masks, and they bought themselves a particle intrusion detection machine for like $3,000 and started testing different things out, found all these different things, and found one brand of blue shop towel that was as good as an N95, sewed that into their masks and had it solved. So what if Fauci had come out and said, look, we have a problem. So this is, again, back to my original point. They don't trust people. I would trust people. In that position, I say, look, we screwed up. We should have had masks on store. We should have. We should have been ready for a pandemic. We didn't. We forgot to do that. Our bad. We won't do that again. But we're going to need your ingenuity. Please. Here's a $1 million challenge. Anybody who can figure out how to make a better mask in a sew shop, go. And you would have seen this amazing stuff happen.
But what
would have been amazing.
That would have been awesome. What did we learn later? That it wasn't even about N95. It was that the masks may stop a droplet. And that's all we needed. In which case, people,
anything is better than nothing in that scenario by far.
I went to Home Depot. We're buying wood because we were like building ramp stuff, and they're like, you need a mask. And I was like, oh. And I walk back to the car. I pull a t-shirt from the back seat and I wrap it on my face. And they're like, good to go. They were like, yeah, a t-shirt folded over twice. That's thicker than an N95. You're great.
Except mm-hmm. you got to remember, they don't stop droplets. They absorb the droplets, and then you got to wash them out. You gotta wash them out. Oh, I wish, man, the first day he came out was like, you gotta wash your mask every day.
You gotta wash your mask.
My favorite moment is iconographic. So the then Surgeon General at the time, he says, he goes out and he's gonna show how to do the t-shirt thing, right? So he comes out, yeah, and the t-shirt he picks says, got naloxone, right? Which is the antidote for an opiate overdose. So I'm just thinking, like, just metaphorically, the Surgeon General's going, showing us how to fold up a got naloxone t-shirt to make it into an impromptu
mask. Why would
mask.
They use that shirt?
Why? So somebody picked that on purpose. So I'm always looking for the symbolism, but I just, like, that was bizarre.
Whoa.
You sometimes through wonder the why, glass. Sometimes things happen with this stuff, and I'm just like, why? You want to believe there's some secret conspiracy going on because they can't be that dumb, right?
This is why I tell you, they're just regular people. That was a really dumb decision right there.
Someone, maybe it was Surgeon General.
Mm-hmm.
So they pulled a shirt out of a box and said, here you go. And he was like, great. And he didn't think twice.
Yeah, but there's a reason that shirt was in that box. That's for sure.
Naloxone.
It was when the people started selling like masks that with like branding on it and like pictures and stuff is when I knew the shark had been, in my opinion, the shark had been jumped.
Oh, dude. Yeah. I got ads on Facebook for like, it's like this male model and he's like looking all serious with these special glasses. He's got this sweater on where the zipper is off to the side and he's wearing a mask that's got like sharp edges and points in it. It's like fancy designer masks.
Couldn't do
now
it.
Now we went to the mall and we bought a bunch of silly games and puzzles, and there's a massive bin, and it was like, It was like 75% off masks, buy two, get one, or like buy one, get one free. And just like no one's touching them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we got the Delta variant though. Now they're saying that because of the Delta variant, well, so the CDC, I believe it was CDC director said, if you're vaccinated, then the variant is no issue. But LA reinstituted their guidelines and we're seeing lockdowns in Australia, just in general, because mm-hmm. of the COVID strain. And I think Canada as well has been locking. Yeah. Have you heard about that? Canada, mm-hmm. maybe?
Yep. And in Israel too, considering it.
I'm interested. What exactly is the Delta variant? Are you familiar?
I am. How wonkish you want to get? It's kind of a cool story.
Just objective. It really is. Yeah.
The one that YouTube says that we're allowed to talk about because we are serfs to the YouTube machine.
Sure. So
we'll talk about the more serious in depth stuff at TimCast.com.
Well, this makes the Delta variant sound a little bit ominous. So YouTube's going to love this.
As long as it scares people.
Good TV, I guess.
Yeah. Right?
All right, so when we say a variant, what we're really talking about is there's this genetic structure and it's a string of letters. And some of those letters change over time randomly. And every so often one of those random changes makes it do something, like be more transmissive. And those, if it makes it more transmissive, that survives better. So that's a variant because, like, if it has an 80% better chance of jumping from me to you, that's the one you get, and then you get it, and then it's just boom, right?
If it were to change and make it less transmissible, would it still be considered a variant?
It would, but it'd die out pretty quickly in the overall thing, because this is survival of the fittest. It's just evolution, right? Yeah. So the virion that can do the better transmissive job is going to go farther, right? So we had the first one. It was called the D614G, and what that means, the D is an amino acid. It got changed into a G. At the 614 position, that was the original one. That's the so-called UK variant, 40% more transmissive. Wow. The Delta has that, has all the old favorites, plus it has this last one, which is the P681R. Now, this turned a proline into an arginine, and this is really cool because this virus has a really funky thing that no related virus has, which is what's called a polybasic furin cleavage site. It's this thing. This little 4 amino acid chunk that sits between the two spike proteins that when it gets clipped, makes it go into your cell like that. By the way, it's an old trick. If you're doing gain of function in the lab, that's an exact insert that you would put at that exact location. And by the way, we've done that 11 times for other things and made them more better at being bad, right? So it has this really weird thing. Well, that with that P is the one that got changed. So this thing now we think, the data says, gets into your cells even faster and better. That's the ominous part. The good news is I don't have data to say it's any more harmful.
Oh, okay.
Yet.
Well, people should still take it seriously and talk to their doctors about what's right for them.
They should, because he's like, Doc, I'm worried about the P681R. There. And your doctor will go, what?
I'm so glad you explained P681R means the P turned into an R at the 681 position. Thank
you. Cool.
That's how that works.
So
but it's way more transmissive. Way more.
Yeah. So I guess the CDC is saying, though, that you're fine if you're vaccinated, that you don't have to worry about this new variant.
That's what they're saying. But everybody's favorite other doctor, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, who they never mentioned serves on the board of Pfizer, is saying maybe a third shot would be a good thing to do in order
They've talked about boosters. Yeah.
Boosters.
Johnson & Johnson. Let me make sure I can pull some of this stuff up, too.
Yeah. So that's where they're going with that. I think the vaccines, at best, we can say they're partially protective at this point in time.
The UK will be rolling out COVID-19 booster shots in September.
Yep.
So they're going to be having, and there was a story in NBC that really freaked me out. And, I know you guys, you don't want to hear me say it, but I have to say it again. There's a story from NBC that said mix and match. And it said some experts were advocating for taking multiple different kinds. And I'm just like, stop, no,
experts?
NBC.
Which experts? I hate when they say experts. Mm-hmm. What are they talking about?
It was like, it was an NBC article. I gotta find this one. But that's why I'm just like, I'm pretty sure if you go to your doctor and you ask them, they're gonna be like, no, don't do that. Let me see if I can find the story. Cause we have the one about UK is gonna be introducing boosters.
Mm-hmm.
I wanna know what benefit there would come from mixing and matching them. Do you see any kind of benefit, Chris?
Not I can think of off the top of my head.
So, not
really.
Just to bring it up, this is NBC News. Mix and match COVID vaccine approach boosts immune response, study finds. Now, I will state, as far as I can tell, the FDA has not approved of that practice. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
But consult your doctor.
Yeah. Well, some European countries have started offering alternatives to AstraZeneca and a second shot after the vaccine was linked to rare blood clots. So this is NBC News, and it's a story by Reuters. Here's the best part. There's no byline. There's no violence. This is a major taboo in journalism. Hmm. We're launching the newsroom for TimCast.com.
Good eye on that one.
And I'm very much always like, we must have bylines and bios for all of our reporters. Mm-hmm. People need to know who wrote it and then be able to email that person with corrections and our corrections department. And we're going to have fact checkers. When it just says by Reuters, like source Reuters, okay, I suppose I can like maybe take, let me see if I can dig deeper. We'll do this in real time. Let's see if I can take mix and match COVID, search that, and Reuters, and there we go. All right. And now, okay, so we do have a name. We find the name now. Alistair Smout. Mix and match approach boosts immune response of AstraZeneca's shot, study finds. When NBC News doesn't put a byline on it,
mm-hmm.
makes you wonder, like, we don't know who wrote this or why. The Guardian does this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Staff. That's not a credible source when they do that. For all you know, it's written by a robot. And, mm-hmm. and it's true. They have robots who write news stories. There was something I talked about before. It's called Natural Sciences. Have you ever heard of this?
Mm-mm.
They have automatic news articles that publish. So what they'll do is they'll have specific parameters like temperature, forecast for weather. Mm-hmm. And then an article will automatically be generated saying the 5-day forecast for, you know, Tallahassee, Florida is today will be Sunday. By tomorrow, you can expect to see clouds. Completely automatically generated. They do the same thing with sporting events, MMA and football or whatever. It'll be like, you know, the Raiders scored a goal in this quarter and that quarter and did this, and they'll show you all the stats written by a robot.
Mm-hmm.
You got to watch out for those things.
Well, you do, and it was the Snowden leaks back in 2013, which showed that the GCHQ had bots that were so good at writing comments under all the major newspapers that people couldn't detect what was what. So that's been a thing for a long time. Trust me, things have gotten a lot better since 2013.
I'll see stuff in the live chat sometimes where it will be two comments back to back that will say different things in all caps about, for instance, me. It'll be like, Ian's the best, Ian's the worst, but it'll be they'll come at the exact same time. Two different accounts, all caps, and it's like very weird that those could be two people.
One of the mm-hmm. reasons I tweeted before, stop responding to people who don't use real names and photos and see your political discourse improve. One of the reasons I tweeted that it was a subtweet. I was tweeting about, you know, certain trolls. But one of the main issues is that we've long known that governments use what's called sock puppets. They use one person will have 50 accounts
mm-hmm.
and they'll bombard you with an opinion to make you think it is public opinion. People fall for this like crazy.
Sure.
You'll get a small pizza restaurant will announce they're having a, you know, like the Proud Boys are going to have a meeting at some restaurant. The restaurant owner has no idea. And then one day the restaurant owner gets 40, you know, emails or whatever. And they're all from different people in different names saying, why are you hosting white supremacists and Nazis? And they'll be like, whoa, what are all these things? It's probably one person doing it. That's why it's like, I want to know who I'm talking to. And within reason, mm-hmm. I still will engage in conversations with people who don't use, you know, names or photos or anything like that. Sometimes people want to be anonymous for an obvious reason. We talked about this. But I'm just pointing that out. That if we're in this space where we're like, we're not going to stand by our names and have these conversations, then you have a massive exploit in your face from activist groups. And I'll tell you one thing, conservatives are not engaging in this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure some are, but they are not as politically savvy and organized as the mainstream left is and the intelligence agencies. So when it comes to engaging with sock puppets, it is probably 2-1 that you're engaging with a leftist sock puppet who's lying to you than you would be someone on the right, but it exists on both sides.
Well, we know information is power, and so, of course, this power has not been left to its own devices, and this goes way beyond citizens. I remember there was this really embarrassing moment. I think Reddit, when it, you know, was first coming out and it's really starting to explode. I can't remember the year. I'd have to look it up. 2013 to 15, somewhere in there. And they said, hey, where's our traffic coming from? I think it was on like Our Data is Beautiful. So they looked at the IP accounts and, oh my gosh, wouldn't you know, there's this one little town in North Carolina that like blew everybody else out of the water. And that's where Fort Hood's located. And they have an operational center for information control, right? And then I think they VPN'd it and got rid of that little like data signal. But it was pretty obvious to me what was happening then, right? So information is actually power. So when you see comments, you have to know. First question ought to be, is this real? Because it might be. It might not be. We don't know. We just don't know. But information is power.
Yeah. Which is why when you saw the New York mayoral election thing happen, Eric Adams is like, yo, what's with all these extra votes?
Yeah, hey.
All these liberal journalists come out saying you're Trumpian, you're lying, this is ridiculous, you're a sore loser, even though he's winning.
Yeah.
And then it turns out that the election board was like, oh, actually, yeah, he was right. Mm-hmm. Sorry about that. But you see the immediate reaction from the establishment is protect the machine at all costs.
Right.
Don't challenge, don't question, don't investigate. When I went to do the Sweden investigation, Donald Trump goes on, he's at a rally and he goes, did you see what happened last night in Sweden? It's terrible. And then, the media explodes like, what happened last night in Sweden, Trump? What are you talking? He was talking about a documentary he watched on Fox News last night. And so he didn't speak as clearly enough. I announced, I did a GoFundMe. I'm like, hey, I'm going to raise money to go to Sweden and actually investigate because I'd worked for Vice. I'd worked for Disney and I had done these kinds of on the ground documentary investigations. And I had journalists I knew from Vice message me saying, do not go. And I was confused. I was like, what do you mean? I was like, one of the guys I went to Ukraine with. And I'm like, we went to Ukraine together to investigate stuff. Like, why wouldn't I go to Sweden? And he goes, just don't do it. Give the money away. Give it to a charity. And I was like, I raised money to go to report journalism. It would be fraudulent if I gave it away. I have to refund it. And then I got another message from someone saying, don't fuel their conspiracies. And I was like, do you think the conspiracies are true? Because if I actually go, I'm assuming I'm going to prove them wrong. And they're like, no, don't go. Creepy. People I knew and worked with all of a sudden were just like, do not challenge the machine.
And that was just about the machine.
It was weird.
What do you think that was really about?
I have no idea. It's a cult, man. And I say cult a lot and people are like, you know, Tim saying cult again. When people I worked with at Vice who are low level reporters and they get paid trash, we fly around reporting stories one day just instinctively defend the machine. No one told them to message me. Mm-hmm. There's no handler. Like, they're not secretly part of some government agency. They were just so indoctrinated. They were like, don't you dare report on any of this because we said no. And I'm like, I'm genuinely confused by what you're talking about. And I went. Mm-hmm. And then Slate, these lefties loved that I came back saying like, yeah, there's not really that much crime. It's like, there are problems here. Crime is going up, but relative to most places. Mm-hmm. And the problems of Sweden were very, very nuanced. It wasn't like a bunch of immigrants came in a year ago and then caused problems. It was actually the children of immigrants from 20 years ago. There's a lot of nuance there. And Sweden really screwed things up. But I was just to experience that whole thing was a very strange experience from having people I knew and worked with saying, do not report, don't do journalism. And I'm like, but I always do journalism. It's like brain slugs infected their bodies and took them over. It was the weirdest thing. And then going to Sweden, experiencing the message control when all of the media aligned against me after we got into this conflict in an area called Rinkeby, it was weird to see how coordinated the machine was.
Mm-hmm.
Creepy.
Now, has it always been like that, or do you think it's getting worse?
I think it's getting worse.
And what could explain that? So back to this idea of leaders and followers. I have this theory that things are getting so tense for people, right? So young people in particular. I've just had this event. This really nice young kid comes up. He's in teens. He's in college, and he's like, "Thanks for what you do. I have a question. Like, what would you do if you're me?" He's like, "I'm studying, but I don't believe in the future at all." And he's coming up with like this existential dread, which is, I'm supposed to live into this story. Here's my story. Go to school, get good grades, come out, get a job. You're supposed to plan on all this stuff. Meanwhile, what's your school telling you? Oh, hey, the ice caps are melting and this whole thing's about to go up in flames. You know, it's hard to sort of square that circle. And so I think confronted with that, people start to cling to anything, including maybe, you know, obedience to the machine or something. I think it's just, I think it's a big defense.
For sure. It's part of why information is so powerful, like what you said earlier, because if you can give them a path or a reason to live or a solution or at least an idea of a solution, like, yeah, iron fertilization, we can repopulate the salmon. Have you studied iron fertilization?
Yeah, they're going to get the, you know, carbon out of you can the algae blooms or
the,
whatever.
The coral reefs, it also feeds the salmon. The iron creates plankton, which then the salmon can eat. And so we can regrow the fish population of Earth. We can regrow the coral by shattering it and placing it all over, and then it all grows together and forms giant reefs. Like, there are solutions. If people don't know, they get scared, and then they want a leader, and they look to people like Anthony Fauci, who's like the TV leaders that pop up, reality TV stars, actors, you know, like
I feel like people don't want to have any responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to be told what to do.
I don't know. If I know what to do, I like it. I
Ethan
like the responsibility.
Ethan Klein said it, bro. You don't even got to do anything. The CDC just says do it, and you just do it. Like, okay, well, you know, look, Within reason, I do respect CDC guidance. I say within reason because, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know, Tuskegee, for instance. But you have personal responsibility. Yes, they can give you advice, but ultimately it's on you to go and seek out what's right for you, which includes talking to your doctor.
Mm-hmm. Or perhaps becoming a doctor.
Okay. Well,
yeah, that's true.
The bright spot that came for me out of all this COVID stuff was really looking into things like certain supplements and whatnot and realized that I had bought into a bunch of junk that my culture had given me, including my doctor, literally telling me vitamins are just an expensive way to take a leak, right? You know, you eat them and you piss them out, right? Mm-hmm. But in
water
fact,
soluble.
Vitamin D, I have this whole crazy story on how important vitamin D is, and it's an amazing story.
And Fauci said so.
Well, only because Jennifer Garner asked him on her vlog, and he was starstruck, so he did admit to taking vitamin D, but he never came out and said, you should.
I thought he did. I thought he said vitamin D is good and people should be...
It's still on the NIH treatment guidelines right now. Under COVID, it says there's neither enough data to refute or endorse vitamin D. But there's tons of data.
You know, what I found? I winters are you know, like I don't like winters.
Right.
I like the cold.
Mm-hmm.
And then this past year, I started wondering, like, why am I, like, so energized and energetic and jumpy and, like, full of, you know, just ready to go? Why do I skate better in the summers? And in the winter, even indoor, it's harder. And I'm like, dude, it's vitamin D.
Vitamin D.
I'm not getting enough sunlight. I'm inside. It's air. It's heated. And there's less sunlight. So I got some vitamin D gummies, and I felt fantastic.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not getting enough
sunlight.
The
more you study vitamin D, it's like it's not a vitamin. It's a hormone. It's like involved in all these things, and it's about inflammation and bone repair. It's like crazy good stuff. And
it's a vitamin.
Almost everybody is deficient in it, particularly dark-skinned people, because the melanin in your skin, particularly at higher latitudes, prevents the sun from coming in, the UVB rays, and making the vitamin D. So, like, if you or I took our shirt off, and you know, we'd get like 10,000 units in like 15 minutes, right? But
of course, consult your doctor before taking any vitamin or supplement.
Or taking your shirt off.
Yeah.
Is there a difference in the value biochemically of getting producing vitamin D naturally from sunlight or taking a vitamin D supplement?
There probably is. Well, so the vitamin D from sunlight has its own regulation process where you can't get too much. It'll shut itself down. If you could technically take too much, but it's a big, big, big number.
Wild.
Right? It's a really big number.
It's a fat soluble. It's a hormone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fat soluble too.
Fat soluble. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, so, but the water soluble stuff you just kind of piss out, but the fat soluble stuff you can get really sick on. Right, like vitamin A.
That's a different story. But yeah. Vitamin D takes a lot. Like you would have to take mass. At my weight for myself, it would be a huge number.
I was reading about like general health and dieting a long time ago, and I read that we don't get enough vitamin C in our diets.
Mm-hmm.
It was something like for every 50 pounds an animal weighs, they produce something like 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C or something like that. I don't know if you got numbers. Maybe you know.
It's true. So we're one of only 3 mammals that can't make vitamin C. We had some weird mutation that bollocks this up for us a long time ago. Every other animal does it, particularly when they get stressed. So a goat that's like breaks its leg or something, they've done the studies, will manufacture 60 grams of vitamin C in the next 24 hours.
Oh, that's a lot.
It's a huge amount.
Yeah.
And by the way, you can't take that much because you can't tolerate it through your GI tract. So that's why they do high dose vitamin C now. When somebody's coming in with like full blown sepsis, multi organ mm-hmm. shutdown, they pump the vitamin C in there, and amazing how it recovers them.
What does vitamin C do? Like, is there a process by which it's converted into hydrogen peroxide or something like that?
No, it's the precursor for pretty much every stress hormone you're going to make. That's going to help you get through that stressful process, right? Cortisol, cortisone, things like that. It's also really important for collagen repair and things like that. So Linus Pauling, 2-time Nobel Prize winner, he's getting on in his years, and so you know. Sometimes old guys lose the story or plot line. That's what they tried to say about this guy. But late in his career, he's like, vitamin C is the bomb. He had all this data, 400,000 records from GIs, and noted that and this was all before computers, they had to hand track this. He noted over time that the people who had the higher vitamin C levels at check-in when they got their physicals had much lower levels of heart disease. So right around that same time, though, the drug company's like, oh, you see people have the plaques in their arteries, and we look in the plaques, and we see cholesterol, so let's take cholesterol down. He was like, you got it all wrong, Bucky. That's not what's happening. That cholesterol is there to try and repair the damage. The damage is happening
vitamin
before.
C.
And it's because we don't have vitamin C. So he comes up and he puts vitamin C in, and all of a sudden they're showing that they're clearing up people's atherosclerosis within months if they have adequate levels of vitamin C.
And it's the cholesterol that's doing it with the help of the vitamin C?
And the cholesterol is there to help repair the damage that's already happening.
But you could be wrong.
I could be wrong, and you should consult your doctor.
That's right.
No, but it's guinea pigs. They don't make vitamin C, right?
I'm not sure about that one. There's some bat, and I forget what the other one is.
Whoa. I think it's guinea pigs.
Wow.
I could be wrong.
Why?
I think don't pigeons not make vitamin C either?
Not sure about pigeons.
I was reading some book a long time ago. I read his book about it a long time ago.
Is there any explanation as to why?
It was saying that the and again, I'm not an expert in this. It was like 10 years ago I read this thing. It said that the amount we're told is our daily 100% is the minimum to avoid scurvy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that if you look at, like you said, 60 grams, the goat?
Yep.
Yeah, so what do we take, like 60 milligrams?
You might take 500 or 1,000 milligrams or something like that. But again, it depends how much can actually be absorbed at that time. So our gut really limits that. So if you get in real serious situation, good doctors now will give you that right IV because you can put a lot in through IV. You can really cram it.
Good doctors with good opinions, good medical advice.
Well, I'll tell you. So I work with these doctors who are figuring all this stuff out, and they've got this great story around vitamin C, which sounds a lot like all these other stories we've been talking about, right? Where there's a whole medical establishment that really hates the idea and they try and poo-poo it and they design studies to fail. And these guys are just like, look, you know, when somebody comes into an ICU with multi-organ failure for sepsis, right, they can take the average death rate from around 50% and knock it down to about 8%. And they can do it reliably and repeatedly. And if I end up in the ICU, I want these guys treating me. Period.
And they're doing intravenous, like, vitamin C.
That's the first thing they do. Like, even before they take your first vital sign, they get that drip going, right? So then some other doctors say, well, let's study that. And so they design it so that they administer it within 24 hours of showing up. And these guys are like, no, every minute counts. They can prove that. Every minute counts. And so these guys set up these studies and start it within a day. And, of course, it has a much lower efficacy after that. Hmm. So what do we say about a system where people are incentivized to design a trial to fail? What if that was you or your dad or your mom or somebody you loved in that got enrolled in that? I mean, how do we roll with that information?
It bothers me.
I don't think they're going to let you die, man. You know what I mean? I think sometimes people make bad calls. Sometimes a doctor will use his best judgment, but I don't think there's anybody like twirling their mustache. Maybe at Big Pharma for sure. But like doctors and hospitals?
Belief systems are powerful enough that people do crazy things when their belief system is challenged.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about this the other day that another book I read a long time ago that around 24 or so is when people's brains start becoming like fully matured, sort of solidifying their worldview.
Mine was around 40, but that's keep going.
Nice. Well, but they say that midlife crisis happens when the brain reopens to become.
Oh, that's what happened to me.
So the idea is that if you've survived that long, your brain is telling you the things you've learned have kept you alive, hold on to them, because if we maintain this, we can survive longer. So what happens then is, if you present evidence that is undeniable to somebody whose worldview is solidified, maybe somebody who's 30, their brain will start panicking, because they're like, no, we can't accept this, it puts us at risk, and so their brain switches to anger mode. And then they shut down the logical process centers and go right into, how dare you? Yeah. And they start ad hominem and they just go nuts. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure people have experienced this. Have an argument with somebody and then they just snap and you're like, why are you so mad? Whoa. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's how you know you've touched into a belief system. So if you have an opinion, right, you say, oh, I think this is the best baseball pitcher. Here's my stats. And I come up with different stats and we trade stats for a while. It's all cool. But if you have an opinion about something, that's fine. If you have a belief system, it's the emotions.
That was in Dogma. Chris Rock says that. He says something like that. He's like, an idea can change, but beliefs, those are harder to change, and people die for beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have a lot of ideas. The joke is someone once commented on a YouTube video saying Tim Pool's a milquetoast fence sitter, and I'm like, hey, let's roll with that one, and I use it. It's technically not true, because I get really angry about freedom, free speech, civil rights, and things like that. But for a lot of things, like, I got some ideas, but I don't think if I'm not an expert on cancer, I'm not going to tell people what to do with cancer. I have no idea.
It was making me think about the scientific community and how theories and hypotheses are battled amongst in quantized inertia, for instance, is a new theory by Mike McCulloch. He's been working on it, and there's just a lot of pushback because it does away with dark matter in his theory. So the people that have theorized dark matter don't want their theories to be lost and upended, because then their creds are diminished. And
so actually there's somebody I know very, very well, but I'll let them retain their privacy, whose father was a physicist. And I was asking about string theory and M theory, and he explained that there's a big problem right now with, at the time, this was 10 years ago, so I don't know a lot about physics. He was explaining There's actually a lot of problems they can't figure out when it comes to string theory and M theory that have many people believing it's probably not correct. But the problem is nobody wants to give up their life's work.
Mm-hmm.
They spent 40 years working on these theories and the math, and you want to come and tell them now it's all wrong? They can't accept that.
It's very hard to do. I believe it was the physicist Niels Bohr who said, science advances one funeral at a time.
That's wild.
So brutal.
Because it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. And so when it comes to like this whole area of this medical stuff we've been talking about, it's really important to understand that if somebody's belief system is in the way of you and your health, you need to detect that. And then find somebody whose belief system maybe is more flexible.
That's why there's a lot of people who are like, who have messaged me saying, you know, my doctor didn't know. And I'm like, bro, there's other doctors out there.
Yeah.
A second opinion is like a normal thing.
Didn't know is okay. Doesn't want to know is not okay. Right. I've had a lot of people message me say, my doctor, I gave them the data. I'm giving them papers. And they're like, don't give me that stuff. I'm not interested. Right. I say, find a different doctor.
Absolutely.
That's what you do then. Right.
We were talking with somebody, I can't remember, but they mentioned that they had a doctor who gave them some political response to their question, and so they said, and they called a different doctor and said, I don't care for the politics, just tell me, like, here's my age, here's my family,
mm-hmm.
and then the doctor's like, here's what we're gonna do, here's what makes sense based on the criteria, not the politics.
There's a whole article that just came out about, doctors who've banded together who are so scared of the wokeness that these are typically older doctors, you know, they've been in practice a decade or more. Men and women doctors, and what they're afraid of is that they see these younger doctors coming in who won't treat because somebody has the wrong ideology, right? Like, you know, I think that person's a skinhead or the Republican or a proud boy. Yeah, I won't treat them, or they won't give them the same quality of treatment, but they're open about it. And so this is really terrifying, right, to get to that level, because now we're into the us versus them. Now you've started to dehumanize, and that's when you know you're getting pretty far down the path. So
Yeah, definitely. So
just a quick aside on this. I was speaking at this conference. This really sharp guy comes up afterwards, takes me to the side, asks, you know, he said, this guy had worked for several joint chiefs of staff and was pretty connected in, and said, by the way, when you were talking, Chris, about that we were going to attack North Korea, this was like, I don't know, 5 years ago, I was reading all these signs, and I knew we were about to do that because I suddenly saw all these articles come out in the New York Times about how prison guards in North Korea were like kicking puppies and like, you know, doing stuff. We were dehumanizing. So I watched the dehumanization happen. And so I wrote out to my followers. I'm like, hey, looks like things are about to heat up with North Korea. This guy came up and just a couple years after the fact and said, you have no idea how right you were. We had two carrier groups in that moment, and they were all spooled up, and we were ready to go. How did you know? And I said, it was easy. New York Times was printing stuff about how inhumane the guards were in the prisons over there. You never see. And it came out in four newspapers at once.
They need to rally public support.
Right.
Well, let's talk about this.
Dehumanize first. That's what you do.
We'll talk about this. Fauci was doing an interview. He said that it's almost like there are two Americas due to people who are not getting the vaccine. And it's fascinating. He's correct. I've talked about this before. Let's say you live in Texas where they have no restrictions, no lockdowns. Mm-hmm. I think it's Oregon that started saying they want to implement vaccine passports.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're from Texas, no more tourism into Oregon. Not that a lot of Texans wanted to go there anyway, like, to be completely honest. Probably the other way around, people fleeing Portland to Texas. But let's say you're in Florida, you want to go to New York. Well, New York says we're going to do the Excelsior Pass for, like, Madison Square Garden. You got to be able to prove your vaccination status so you can't go see the Foo Fighters. So now people in states without the restrictions who are abiding by the law and regulations and guidelines won't be able to go to other states. Now that is where it gets crazy, because for the longest time, we have open travel between states. When this whole thing started, there were checkpoints set up at New York, going in, and they would, you know, I don't know exactly what they were doing, but there were stories that from like New York to Connecticut had police at the border,
mm-hmm.
checking plates that were from New York because they were like, New York's a hotspot. So we're actually starting to see a reemergence of borders in the U.S. and laws that prohibit people from free travel or from actually being able to use accommodations, public accommodations, in certain states.
Does that apply to Amazon drivers too? Hmm. And truck drivers?
Yes. And this is where a lot of people in our super chats have brought this up, that a trucker who's from, say, Nebraska,
mm-hmm.
is going to be, they're like, hey, this one's going to New York. Can't go. Sorry. Oh, well, this one's going to Oregon. Oh, yeah, I can't go there.
Well, he could, but he's going to have to drive around this one state, right?
Well, let's say the destination is Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, no, they're doing vaccine passports in Oregon. The guy's going to say, where do I go to the bathroom and get food? I'm not going. Sorry, find someone else to drive. And we're already dealing with, apparently, the shortage with truckers. So now a bunch of people, like, there's fuel, like gas stations aren't getting the fuel they need. You add in these heavy restrictions, which so far hasn't taken off for the most part, but we are seeing it happen in certain areas. Mm-hmm. It's not even about hard ban. This is what people need to understand. You don't need to ban people who aren't vaccinated. You need only apply pressure. So that could mean, oh, you can, everyone's free to come here, vaccinated or unvaccinated. But if you're not vaccinated, you got to go in the back. Mm-hmm. That's pressure. And some people are going to say, I'm not interested in being the guy in the back room. So have a nice day. Portland can say, we don't, truckers, you're allowed to come. Don't worry. We're not banning people who aren't vaccinated, but you can't go to these select gas stations and these restaurants are off limits. And most of the companies here are required it. So you'll figure it out. They're going to be like, I'm not taking that stress. So that pressure is enough to dramatically alter this country. I find it fascinating when you have all this talk of peaceful divorce due to the extremism, the violence, and now you have actual bureaucratic pressure, which is starting to emerge.
Two Americas.
Yeah.
You got that divide and conquer thing going on. And, I mean, this should just be completely common sense. There are some people who cannot take these vaccines.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
So if you've already had an anaphylactic reaction in a prior vaccine episode, which has happened to a lot of people, you are not a candidate. It says so right on the CDC website, right? Which apparently you can still get in trouble for quoting this stuff, right? But there it is. And they say, oh, by the way, and if you've had the first shot and you have a really bad reaction that passes a certain threshold, you shouldn't get the second. So you are now not fully vaccinated, on and on and on. It's a complex situation.
There was a band. I forgot their name. I don't care. They said $1,000 to see the event, but a discount. If you're vaccinated, it'll only cost you $18.
Yeah, I saw that.
And there was a woman who was a fan who gave an interview where she said because she had COVID recently, the doctors told her she was ineligible for the time being and mm-hmm. she had to come back later. So that meant she wasn't able to go to the show. But guess what? Rich people, come on in, baby. It's all yours.
It's a rich man's world.
Yeah.
It has been for 10,000 years or something.
Well, and here's the problem with all this. It doesn't logically, you can't parse your way through. It doesn't make sense. So if we, let's go back to first principles. What's the point of all this? The point of all this should be public health, I guess.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. I don't know anymore, to be honest.
I don't know either.
Sustention of human life.
No,
our society and species. Yes, that is the
should,
point.
Should be, but certainly, never let a good crisis go to waste. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the saying.
There's a lot.
And it was interesting because, we had Destiny, here. He's like a leftist, streamer. And I said, you know, it looks like we're seeing people exploit the crisis. And he goes, when else would you try and make sweeping changes and reforms? You know, what better time than now when we have to lock things down? Now's our opportunity. And I'm like, then would you trust every move made if you knew people were simply saying, we got a crisis? Great. Let's do a bunch of things we always wanted to do.
Oh, so that means, let's support, people going to McDonald's and getting Krispy Kreme donuts and shopping at Walmart, but we're going to shut down small and medium sized enterprises, right?
You know, this
is is that the crisis they wanted to exploit? We want the little people to take it in the shorts. I thought that was not a lefty thing.
I got to admit though, there is a real problem.
I'm confused
problem.
Now.
There is a real problem with a lack of personal responsibility. People should not be gorging on donuts and McDonald's, and they should be, you know, doing better, eating better, and exercising. And it's a personal responsibility.
You're 100% right. It is, and it is. That's the conversation I wish that was on the news every day: is how to get healthy, how to feel better.
But they, I think this is exclusively of the Democrats. Well, I shouldn't say exclusively, but it's the rule, not the exception, where they want you dependent. They want you dependent. They want you on social programs. They want you to feel like no matter what you do, you'll never succeed without their help. Look at this. What's the critical race theory message? You are oppressed, and no matter what you do, because of the color of your skin, you will always be oppressed.
Or oppressor.
And you need us to help you to navigate these problems versus the other message of you can be anything you want to be if you believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
Too many leaders. They don't want too many leaders. What's a good ratio of leader to follower in the human race?
One.
Yeah.
One to one?
No.
One to many. Yeah, 1 to 9 billion. One despotic king. No,
1 to 9 billion. What is it, like 1 to 12? 1 to 60?
It's not
5?
No, but hold on. It's not about one leader at all. It's about specialists. You know, if someone came in this room and said, I need to know what magic cards to buy, I'd be like, take it away, Ian. Like,
oh, yeah, ball know. Lightning. No, I like that.
Ball lightning.
It holds a special place in my
No, mind. I mean, like, what are you an expert in? If someone came in and said, I need someone to fix the toilet, I'd be like, it ain't Ian. Like, you're not a plumber. So you're a leader in the right moment. And so, you know, leaders step up when they're called into action.
Oh yeah, and you can inspire people to seize their ability to lead. You know, everyone's good at something.
Dude, if you know, we had someone out here and they were a farmer and a wildlife expert and you know,
like a vaccine, plant, like a doctor.
Like if someone came out here and they were an expert in plant life, I would immediately be like, tell me where to go, what to do, what to wear, and tell me how to find the fruits. And that guy's in charge. But then if he comes in and says, we're going to talk podcasts, I'll be like, okay, well, it ain't you, buddy. Like I'll step up if we're doing a podcast thing. You'll step up when you're doing a fruits and berries in the forest thing. It's like recognizing where you are not the leader and recognizing where you are.
And then, so we have oligarchs or corporations that are attempting to lead the narrative when we have doctors that are more specialized that maybe would be better off deciding what should and shouldn't be talked about.
Don't go to a dentist for foot care.
Right. And don't go to a social network for healthcare, right?
Oh, I love it when Facebook is like, Instagram is giving medical advice and Facebook is, and all the celebrities are and posting these things. But heaven forbid Joe Rogan have an opinion.
Or a critical care doctor who's been, lives, breathes, drinks this and is indisputable world leader on this stuff, right? So, but this has nothing about, that's why I said first principle. Is this about public health? It's clearly not. It's not about that. It's about something else. So we can, you know, assign motives and all that. It's clearly about the money. It's about the Benjamins. It's about power. It's about seizing the moment to ram through some things that otherwise couldn't have been rammed through. And
it's a pie chart. It's a, you know, somewhere in there is a nice little chunk of public health. But then you get greedy hands, man, and people see an opportunity to exploit a crisis. And you know what? The path to hell is paved with good intentions.
Well, listen, if I saw them exploiting it in a way that I could detect and say, okay, I get it, not how I do it, but it makes sense, it's still incoherent. It doesn't make sense to me, right? The only thing that's starting to emerge in this pattern is, as soon as I saw the climate lockdowns, we have to do climate lockdowns, that's when the pieces started to fall for me, I think.
Right? I think this, well, you take a look at Texas and Florida. They were like, ah, we out. So it's clearly not a unified message in terms of our government. There are different jurisdictions with different beliefs and different people are exploiting different things. And I think one of the reasons it may not be cohesive is just that it's a chicken with its head cut off, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's Joe Biden comes out earlier this year. This is one of the most important points when he was like, we may need more lockdowns, while Texas was like, we're getting rid of them. And I'm like, clearly Joe Biden is not speaking to the worldview of red states. He was speaking to New York and California about what they want to do based on their fears and their perceptions. So it's chicken with head cut off, man.
So we're back to chickens. I like it.
Yeah, chickens. And you saw what Joe Rogan said recently. He said, we're just throwing it to Joe Rogan this episode, that it doesn't feel like we have any real meaningful leadership. Like, who believes that we have a real leader right now? Even the people who voted for him. Like, do you really feel like he's leading anything? I don't think so.
Well, no, and this is the thing that I think I'm most concerned about. So if you go to a corporation or you're in your own personal life, you develop a strategy at some point. What's a strategy? It's got two parts. It's got a vision, and you need resources to get there, right? Guess what? It's always easy to have a vision, hard to find the resources. So you have to marry those things up, right? So what's the vision of our country? Where are we going to be in 30 years, right? Nobody can articulate that at this point in time, right? And without that, we're rudderless. We're just drifting along in this story.
Graphing, baby.
I do hear you, but I think it's fairly obvious that, what, you said 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about 2051. It's going to be Barron Trump. He'll be on his second or third term. You know, Don Jr. will be.
So we're doing dynasties.
I'm just kidding. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of people who believe that the Trump dynasty and, you know, whatever. And
what's the country going to look like? Are we living Are we all in mansions? Are we in tiny homes? Are we eating like algae? Like, what's going on?
Ooh, algae's good. You can grow algae too.
No, I think it's going to be lab grown foods. I think we're going to have kind of like protein mush that is flavored.
So like in the Matrix, after you've taken the red pill and you're in the ship, pull the little gruel bowl out.
That's actually a black pilled version of it. You're going to go to the store and you're going to say, I'll have the chili dog with extra cheese, and I'll get a large cola with a large fry, and it's all made of the same thing but flavored differently. So your hot dog comes out and the bun is actually like a protein fungus. The hot dog itself is a thicker, denser protein fungus. Your drink is flavored by sugars cultivated from a protein fungus. You see where I'm going with this. The French fries are just long mushrooms or something like that.
Could be, but I think that we're going to run into trouble with that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so much more complicated how nature actually works. So there's these micronutrients, macronutrients. It's not just giving you like the base calories, which is sugar, you know, it's some little thing. We need all these things like trace amounts of selenium and magnesium and maybe we'll work all that out, right? But your needs are going to be different from your needs because your gut biome's different and you have a different genetic structure. So it's just different.
You're familiar with Soylent?
Yeah.
The company Soylent tried making this food replacement. And it was interesting. The idea was, can't we just figure out exactly what a person needs and give it to them and they don't got to worry about eating?
No. No.
Because we are not uniformly produced in a factory.
Mm-hmm.
Every single person is different.
And every day that person is different than they were the day before.
And so the problem is, if you were to say, drink this bottle, like it first came in like a powder form with like a thing of oil, and you have to, because you need fat in your diet.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, okay, the problem is, some people are taller and require more, we're not giving enough. Some people are small and they're getting too much and they're getting sick. So now it's just like a meal replacement shake that's, in my opinion, what, like SlimFast? They already make those things. It's got 30-35% of your, you know, daily vitamins, and you drink it, and it replaces one meal, but you still got to eat because you don't know what you're missing.
Didn't that last for like a month, and then people like their bowels were just like ruined or whatever?
It didn't really work out.
I don't think.
It's because they quickly realized. I could be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure before they went public, like with the actual product, they said, we realized you can't actually sustain yourself on this.
Also, the branding. I mean, Soylent Green.
That was the joke.
Is people. Yeah. Soylent Green is people. Soylent's probably not people. You know, I'm really into vertical farming. I'm into vertical farming, indoor vertical farming, like Arrow Farms in Jersey is one of the largest vertical farms in the world. I think the future of humanity might be like a vertical farm on every block or something in a city.
Yeah, but you know what they grow? They grow lettuce greens and those things.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And they don't grow like corn and wheat and stuff.
They grow them on mesh, so without soil, and they'll spray the mesh with like a nutrient. But I'm wondering, what's the difference of food being grown indoors as opposed to outdoors in natural sunlight?
Well, there's a lot of advantages for indoors, but for that stuff, again, we're growing greens, like really high value. You're getting some arugula, but man does not live on arugula alone, you know? So it's just, I think they're cute. I think they have a role, but to say that's how we're going to feed people, now we got to talk megatons, you know, like how many millions of tons of food product is coming out of those? And also, notice where the energy comes from. Those are all LEDs, are very efficient, but where's the electricity come from for that, right? You follow this along and you say, look, we already have this nuclear reactor. It's 93 million miles away safely. It's a good distance. And it provides that service for free.
I'm now learning that where I live and what we have growing, we'd probably be able to cover a large portion of our diets, maybe like even 60 or 70% just with every day.
Potatoes.
Deer.
Oh my gosh, potatoes.
No, deer everywhere. Just like they're the people out here telling me that they're pests. They're a nuisance. There's so many
of
them.
But once you really started living on them, here's the thing. I'm a hunter. So the deer are everywhere until the day of hunting season. I swear to God.
And they're all gone.
Then they're all gone.
That's some Schumann resume.
It's almost like they don't want to be shot. It's the strangest thing.
Well, no, but like today, every morning, I see like three deer walking through the yard. And they're eating my apples, and I'm like, stop eating my apples, you jerks. They're reaching up in the trees and pulling them down. But we got three apple trees.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're wild, actually. It looks like they were actually planted. We've got tons of wild pawpaw. The mulberry trees are everywhere, and everyone's mad about it.
Mulberries are awesome because they produce fruit for 90 days. It's like strawberries is like a week, you know?
Yeah.
But 90 days, you just get mulberries.
We took a hammock, like just and we held it underneath and shook some branches, and we got like 300. It was insane. There's too many.
Yeah.
You walk in the yard and your feet are turned purple. And I'm like, we should actually start foraging and harvesting these edible berries and plants. We got blackberries. We got wineberries. We got mulberries. So we actually made jam.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. We made some jam with that. I was having peanut butter and jelly. And then we're going to have pawpaw. We have tons of apples. We made some stuff with the apples. And if people didn't live in cities and spread out, then instead of having lawns, for instance, they could be growing some of their food, and it's self-sustainable.
And you should grow some. Everybody should. Even if you only grow like 3% of your calories, the difference between 0 and 3% is night and day. Because you know what you learn at 3%? You're like, this is hard, and I'm not that good at it, or I have to learn some stuff, or, oh, tomatoes don't grow with any shade at all. And there's like a lot of things you got to learn.
The best part
is pretty cool.
I looked up the nutrition value of mulberries. If you eat 10 mulberries, guess how many calories you get?
6.
Yes.
Yes.
Did you look it up?
Right.
No.
6.
We were both.
I'm a wizard.
Six calories.
Uh-huh. I have an identify spell.
So if you need 2,000 calories per day, you're gonna shake that tree until there's nothing left on it.
You'll
and still
burn
be
more
hungry.
Calories shaking the tree.
Yeah, we grew some zucchinis, man. These things grow fast.
Your baseball bats. you don't watch out. Yeah. Big ones, yeah.
They get, so I saw one, and it was maybe like 5 inches long. And then I'm like, eh, it's too small. The next day, it was like yeah. 9, and it's massive. And I'm like, I think that's a little too big, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But what, do you just leave them until they're massive, or what?
Well, the best thing is you get pigs. So my favorite, and pigs love them, and they eat them like crazy. So here's the best part. You get pigs in spring, and in fall is when you're going to be harvesting them or sending them off to be harvested, and that's when your garden is like overflowing with stuff you just can't eat anymore. You can't have another bean. You don't want any more zucchinis. The pigs love them. And all your apples are dropping on the ground. You just give them to them.
Yep. So in the winter, this is the stuff people really need to think about. You know, I can go outside and be like, look at all the fruits and all the glorious vegetables. And then winter comes around, and what did you save and what did you preserve?
Right.
So what do people normally do? You have some chickens, and then you eat the chickens in the winter to survive? I mean, that's not enough chickens.
No, it really isn't. So potatoes. I mean, you have to grow something that you're going to be able to store for a long time, and you have to think that through. So this is something, this is actually near and dear to my heart. I think people should be resilient. And being food resilient is part one. I love food resilience. I like being energy resilient as well. I can heat my house 4 different ways now.
Right? Wow. What are they?
I've got an oil furnace. I've got a wood furnace. I've got an electrical mini split. It's a very efficient heat pump that exchanges heat and cool from the outdoor air. Very, very efficient.
Oh, I was watching a video about these. Have you seen that fluid that when sunlight hits it, it changes the composition, and then they can, with electrical current, release the heat energy from it.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Imagine
storing stuff is going to be, that's the hard part. Storing energy is always the hard part.
Yeah, so this is amazing technology. Imagine you have this, you have like a you know, staggered pipes running with this fluid. The sunlight's hitting it, and then in the winter, the sunlight hits it. It changes, it absorbs the energy, then goes into your basement, and then converts that back into heat and heats your home just from the sunlight being funneled. Mm-hmm. Amazing stuff. We should go to Super Chats.
What's the fourth one? You said
I got passive. So and this is just a function of how the thing came. We have this stone fireplace. It's probably half the size of this room. It's massive.
Wow.
So it's sort of got like this, it's cool, it's warm in the winter, cool in the summer. It's like it's just a moderating influence. It's really good.
We have geothermal here. So the copper
geothermal's awesome.
Yeah, it's like copper tubes run underground, and then it is extremely efficient, and you can get it freezing in here. It's a heat wave, and it's like I'm freezing.
Yeah, it's awesome
because the cold underground easily dissipates the heat and easily pulls in the cold. But we'll jump over to Super Chats. Before we do, smash that like button, subscribe to this channel, and here's the big thing. We are going to. Like with Steve Bannon, we had him here. We're gonna go right for the most intense conversation at timcast.com in the bonus segment because I realized censorship is getting worse. We needed a place to host our own content. We needed a way to sustain it. So we are expanding that whole thing. And now we actually have the opportunity to have these conversations that YouTube is increasingly shutting down. So make sure you become a member at timcast.com because that's where you're going to see that's where we're going to talk about the stuff that we can't. Here at least, but we'll read Super Chats for now. So again, smash that like button. All right, let's see what we got here. Druszaj says, Tim, can we get a party/movement that is against concentrations of power, both government and corporate? The one we should be freeing is the individual. Yes. So what do we call it? The decentralized
party? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
corporations consolidating power is bad, and governments doing the same thing is bad.
Most systems, centralized economy is bad.
Libertarian centrism? Centrism?
Liberal.
If we could just get the libertarians to get the shirts to match the tie. You know?
And narco-centrist.
If we can get the libertarians and the Republicans to come together to create a new party, I think we're set.
And narco-centrists. There you go. Problem solved.
People are afraid of anarcho, though.
Yeah, they are.
Libertarian-centrist.
Yeah, libero-central.
Yeah.
We need a gathering for this decentralized party. It's kind of a, it's kind of
but
a,
where will
it's tricky.
Oh yeah, I like the way you think.
West Virginia, country roads, man. All right, Simon Verco says World War III could be fought domestically. Global collection of civil wars. Everyone just waiting for China to start first, so they can't backdoor everyone.
I keep hearing that China's not nearly as powerful as everyone's making them out
Paper
to be.
Tiger.
And that they're also building 100 new nuclear silos, is that right? In like the Gobi Desert or something?
They're building all kinds of stuff, but they're a lot more powerful than people think. Because they trot out these really amazing missiles that they've got. They've got these missiles that can reach all over the oceans at this point in time. So I think that we're just waiting, that the next war is going to be the one that just shows that the Navy is just a lot of boats looking for a reason to sink, right? and we don't want to tangle up with either Russia or China. I think that would be a very bad learning because they we're building these multi tens of billion dollar like you know aircraft fleets, and they're building these multi million dollar missiles that swarm. So the Zircon out of Russia, it can swarm. They can put up dozens of them, and they talk to each other. And one flies up at 100,000 feet. If it gets lost, another one volunteers.
Whoa!
And they come in at 6 feet off the deck at Mach 5.
Whoa!
And then do these crazy 60G maneuvers to swarm in on something. Very hard to stop, apparently. But we haven't had to face it, so we don't know.
Mach 1 is the speed of sound.
Correct.
Is Mach 5 five times the speed of sound, or is it? Okay.
Yeah, and the problem with that is even if the warhead doesn't go off, it's got so much kinetic energy, it's like you shot a squirrel with a slug.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, it's just got a... The energy of the missile alone is a thing, so... Yeah, I don't want to see World War III. I'd really like to avoid that if we could.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
But that's me.
Tactically D Gaming says, "Hey, Tim, shut up from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Just wanted to tell you about my son Cole, who watches religiously with me every day. It's to the point I can't watch unless he is awake. He is 2 years. Can he get a shout? Tweeted a few pics to you. Shout out, Cole. Thanks for watching, man. Yeah. Get him while they're young.
Good job, Cole.
Douglas Kaplan says, "Yesterday you talked about shadow figures in your room. I have and still experience those. Do you think they could be your faults and guilt that manifested? I'd love to talk more about it, and sometimes I'm terrified of it. Thoughts, and God bless your group." That story was like, I was like 13, so I really don't think so. I don't think I had any strong guilts or faults when I was a little kid. The story was that when I was a little kid, I woke up, and I could see like shadow figures walking past my door, and then I tried to just ignore it, and then felt a presence. Like, I could hear the steps, and I could... It felt like something was walking up to my bed and then stood there and then walked away, and I was just like a little kid.
So this person's asking, maybe did those come from inside, and you're thinking, no, that's outside.
Yeah, no, I for all I know, I was a groggy little kid and some people broke into my house.
I had that thought last night when you were talking about it, like, did you have emotional trauma that it was manifesting as like, I feel like something is there.
It's bro,
like,
I was a little kid playing Mario Brothers, I guess. I don't know. It's outside of Chicago, huh?
Or maybe you have a thought and that these extra-dimensional entities latch on to that kind of thinking. That's a third.
The other story was that one day I was sleeping, and I woke up in the middle of the night, rolled over on my left side, and saw the floor, and there looked like there was a strange waving energy reflection of light of something that looked like water being reflected, but 10 times more brighter. And that I freaked out, and I went to sleep.
Someone just suggested that might be intense moonlight. Do you think that was possible?
No, because I lived in Chicago where you have no, like, there's no window that's going to give you perhaps because all the houses are identical and next to each other, that the one window, like the perfect angle of moonlight, it's entirely possible. And that's why it only happened one time. That's what I'm saying. There's always some reasonable explanation. I'm some little kid. I have no experience or wisdom, and I see something I don't know, and I freak out about it, and that's it.
But sometimes you see that stuff. Like, I saw infrared light. You know, I saw it when I woke up one day. It was just going into my phone. It's always there. Yeah. So maybe... We can talk about this on a different,
right.
Different day.
Black Rock Beacon says, "Great guest. Chris was like the first guy I started following at the beginning. I started hearing bio stuff, started posting right around the same time as him. Posted a lot of this early stuff." Right on.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for that.
JD says, "Hey, Tim, really love all of your content. I've been subscribed for over 2 years now and recently noticed YouTube no longer gives me notifications when you start your live show. Not sure why that is." I think we're all kind of sure why that is.
Well, that happens to me all the time. My subscribers say that a lot. And I can track it. So when I look at, like, when I put a video out, how many come through notifications, how many come through search? Notifications is, like, under 5% every time now.
This is the pressure I was talking about. They don't need to ban us outright, but they exert pressure on our channel so that over time attrition destroys them.
Or they nudge you and you learn, oh, if I should maybe not say things like that, right? It's a nudging. It's a little nudge.
We're pretty obstinate. And so you find people like Ethan Klein of H3H3. He used to be super edgy. He would spout racial slurs on his show. Now he's super mainstream because he learned his lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, he's rewarded with millions of views on his podcast.
There you go.
Do you have multiple videos a day that you put up when you don't get notifications?
I put up 2 a week for sure. And special weeks get more. But this notification thing really kicked in when I started talking about certain unnamed substances that you can't talk about.
Oh, okay.
Right, and then just notice that. It's a form of throttling.
Someone suggested that you only get notifications for 3 videos a day per channel. I don't know how true it is, but we put up clips. So it might be that you're getting notifications for the clips, and then when the fourth...
No. Yeah. At most, we put up one a day.
And for us, people say, I always got notifications for the live show, and now I don't.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I don't think I can read the first name here, but this guy says, come skate at Wakefield, Tim. It's pretty close to you, and we would all love you. Like 20 of us watched you on Joe Rogan at once. I just skated in Wakefield last week, and I made the joke that whoever told me to go skate there was trying to kill me because the ramps have, like the wood's breaking, and they're huge, and everything's falling apart, and I'm like, yo, this is crazy. But we went there. It was fun. There's a concrete section, which is actually pretty good, but still, it's like, yo, those ramps, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe you could build it back up with a GoFundMe or something.
Oh, apparently they're renovating it, and they're going to fix it up. So it's a big park. It's pretty cool. They just need to fix a lot of stuff. And the transitions were super steep. It's fun. There's like a six-foot mini ramp, but it's really steep. So you go up, and you're like floating right away. It's a very, very fast transition. Okay, Cody, I see what you're doing here. He says, I got to say something. I'm speechless. You know, like that book by Michael Knowles. Yeah, that's right. Like that book from Michael Knowles. Oh,
I believe you can get it on Amazon.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to Amazon.
What am I
What are other good
books? Slay the Dungeon says, hi, Tim. Thanks for inspiring me. I started with YouTube thanks to you to help with culture with D&D. Search Slay the Dungeon. I also sent you an email to your jobs email. I'm a professional DM and pay the bills with it. I think we're going to need Ian to spearhead that onboarding project.
I would love to. Message me on Twitter, man. We'll talk D&D.
Yeah, so the idea is it was a really good idea for a show. Someone super chatted us where we would basically do scenarios like once a week. Someone would write a D&D scenario. Someone emailed me saying you can't do that where it's episodic. It needs to be continuous.
Oh, you can do whatever you want.
No, but this is a good idea because we could do a series of 13 episodes where it's kind of like watching a show where you've basically got episode one, the introduction to the story. Here's the characters. Let's play, and then everyone's dying to know what happens by episode 13.
Did you guys ever read Grail Quest?
Mm-mm.
The old books, they were kind of like you play as this guy Pip who like wakes up in this body and he's got Excalibur Jr., this little sword, and Merlin's like telling him, and it's like an adventure book that you read and you roll dice. But it's like every book he would be in a new world in the same like body that he would animate. So we could do something like that.
Rampton says, when did you launch the alpha? It still sucks. We did not launch the alpha. The new alpha is missing a ton of things, but we have it feels like it's 85% done. And so we're aiming for about a week from now to hammer out. I think the beta might be in a few days. It's awesome. I've not seen a website like it. It's going to be like a news website, but it also lists individual channels that we have. So like our YouTube channels, we're going to have different shows and podcasts. And then we've got the newsroom with like trending articles and all that stuff. I am mad impressed. These guys are fantastic at what they're doing. And I'm really excited, because we're going to have probably like 30 different shows, hopefully within a year or so. I don't know how much we should mention about our conversation from last night.
Ben said, you know, we're working on a project with Ben.
There we go.
And,
Ben Stewart. He's fantastic.
We'll give you more details as we go, but Ben Stewart, phenomenal producer. I'm really excited to work
with
him.
And then we're going to be
really cool to hook you up with Ben Stewart at some point.
Cool.
Great.
We're going to be launching a new podcast too, which may be once a week, and it's the Mysteries Show. So we have, Shane Cashman, who's writing these excellent mystery stories, the unexplained, paranormal, conspiracies, just good old spooky fun times. And then we're going to have that recorded, and we're going to do a full episode with, like, sound effects and, like, creaking noises and footsteps
nice.
And all the good stuff.
Yeah.
So you can really, like, chill out late at night during a thunderstorm and just put it on and be like, oh, man. And then – that's only about 15 minutes, and then it's going to go to open conversation where, you know, whoever's hanging out for the day will be like, how did you find this story? And, like, this is crazy. And then just have an open conversation about the weird. That'll be so much fun. Definitely fun.
That sounds like fun.
Royce Ledwig says, highly suggest getting some beehives at the Cast Castle. Chicken City and Bumble Building, let's go. And I'm not kidding. Mm-hmm. We got such a lot of grass, and there were bees everywhere, and they were chilling. I walked over. I was picking up apples. The bees were floating around. They were doing their thing. I was doing my thing. We're having a good time.
Speaking about those experts, get yourself a bee expert. It's very complex. Yes. But, oh, my God, having bees is
Matt
so much
Walsh's.
Fun.
They're good honey.
They are so cool how they operate. Once you groove on them and just – however you want to, you know, settle in, just watch them. They are amazing what they do.
They're
really chill.
West Virginia wild honey, and you glaze that bacon with it and then put it on the grill. Something else, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Honey's legit.
Yeah, I had the Manuka honey. You ever eat that stuff?
Yeah.
With the healing properties.
Ian ordered, what, like 10 gallons of honey?
We got it in the basement. Salt and honey and vinegar, man.
That's it. Never going to survive.
We can boil water and make it taste great.
You'll start emaciating to a certain degree, but you'll have honey, you know, better than nothing.
It does. Complex.
It never spoils. What did they found? Honey in like ancient Egyptian tombs that was still edible?
It crystallizes. It doesn't rot.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it takes those bees something like 2 million flowers that they visit to make a pound of honey. And they go out and they do it. And a single hive might have 50, 60 pounds you can harvest.
Wow.
It's astonishing.
And they make your fruits grow. So, you know.
There's a lot of fruits, 2 million flowers.
All right. Trash Panda says, why is it that the solutions that elites and Greta Thunberg have will kill millions and wreck everything instead of pushing for interplanetary colonization or planting more trees and nuclear power? I don't know if we can get to interplanetary colonization fast enough, and I don't even know if it's possible. Right? A lot of I think the Mars stuff is a bit of a pipe dream.
Well, I do too. And if people are really excited, there is a place in Antarctica you can go, which is about that cold and has about that much water, which is none. There's a dry valley there. So just go hang out there for 2 weeks, tell me how much fun you're having. If you still want to go to Mars, we'll talk.
Doesn't Antarctica still have a magnetosphere to guard you from solar flares?
It does. It has that. Mars, which is kind of awesome too. Yeah.
Mars, none of that though, huh?
No. And it's really cold, barren, and desolate. Listen, we already have a perfect spaceship. It's here. If you can't operate this one, you're really going to hate what happens on Mars.
Dude, that's
how I look at it.
I just heard that, you know, that big trench on Mars.
I mean, let's do it, but don't hope that that's our, like, you know, how we're going to save ourselves.
I got a double part comet. You know that giant trench on Mars? It's huge. It's like a third of the planet or something. I thought it was like a planet collided with Mars and ripped it open, and all the magma flew out in the atmosphere and coated the planet with iron dust, and it rusted. Now that's why there's all this iron oxide. But apparently it was struck by electricity. Mars and Venus have been hit by electrical, and the moon too. And that's why there's all these craters all over the place. It's electrical.
You know, people don't understand. You are not independent from the atmosphere and the biosphere and the ecosystems of this Earth. The easiest way I think I can explain how to understand this is, if you've ever played Super Mario World, you've played it?
Yeah.
You've played it?
Great game.
Mm-mm.
Mario World? No?
Groundbreaking.
All right, so when you go to the haunted houses, you know how there are those white bars and the Boo ghost will come out of it and move around but then go back into it?
No.
You don't remember that? I'm sure a lot of people know what I'm talking about. And those who don't, too bad. But those who do, they're going to go, oh, you are connected to everything on this planet. Breathing in the air, how the chemical composition of the air is made by all the other plant life. What is soil made of? We walk outside, we walk in the soil. What is that made of?
Billions and billions of organisms, little bit of clay, a little bit of carbon, little organic matter. It's all kinds of stuff. Sand.
What you're saying is that when I walk in my backyard, I'm standing on the corpses of billions of dead creatures.
And the live bodies of billions more.
That's right. Yeah, so we emerge from this primordial muck. Before we could even begin to exist, there's tons of, probably more than billions, probably trillions, of dead things that we grow out of and grow our food from.
From Crazy. Clay. They say we came from clay, the original people.
Well, it's this fractal thing, right? So you take yourself, you're a whole thing, you can find out you're a cell. You go down, 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 there's just more and more and more stuff. We can't see it. So a single tablespoon of soil has about as much complexity as a maybe a couple dozen square miles of rainforest. Now, we can imagine rainforest because you can go and you can see all the monkeys and the vines, and it's really cool, and there's ants. But the soil's like that, too. We just can't see it.
Except in the Alaskan rainforest where there's no monkeys.
No monkeys, but they should get them. Monkeys.
I don't think they would last very long up there.
Well, maybe now. I don't know. I heard it was 121 degrees in Canada yesterday.
Yeah.
So
whoa.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the hottest it's ever been, right?
Yeah.
2 days in a row, at least?
Yeah, not by a little, but by a lot.
Wow.
You know.
Oh, great.
All right, check it out. Daniel J. Korica says, wastewater treatment plant operator here. Tim, the sewage is treated before it is discharged into the receiving waters. They don't dump raw sewage. I don't know about Chicago and the surrounding areas, because I think there's a big scandal where they did, and it caused a big problem with E. coli or something.
Well, I think for the most part they do, and they try, but during heavy rainstorms when the plants get flooded, it happens.
Remember when Dave Matthews' band, I think it was, drove over the bridge in Chicago, and then the bus driver, like, or someone on the bus pulled the release and sprayed their tank onto a boat underneath.
I didn't know there was a boat.
That's right. Because the bridges in Chicago are grates, so you can look straight down. And I guess the driver was like, we're over water, pulls it, and there was a boat passing, and it all gets sprayed.
Gross.
Dude, yeah, for real.
That's save that brutal. T-shirt.
Dave Matthews, man.
Yeah, I'll keep it. Commander 232 says, as someone right-leaning, this is what I say to people about climate change. It is happening, but not in the way the far left screams it is. Earth doesn't have a stable climate, never has. All we can do is stabilize the gradual change, not run away. Yeah, what do you think about that?
Entirely possible. All I can tell you is I really enjoyed growing up during a period of climate stability. And so I don't call it climate change anymore. I call it climate instability. We're clearly entering a period of instability, and that's not cool. So if you look at, like, climate over time, humans, it was the last 10,000 years has been, like, really stable on this chart. It's like a flat line. That's when we developed all this stuff. We're like, oh, this is, we'll just do agriculture because the rains always fall here.
Yeah.
If that changes, a lot changes.
Yeah, so, we are reclaiming Vegas, you know. Have you ever read about that?
Well, I was out there and I was visiting the guys who were actually drilling the second set of pipes down into Lake Powell because the first ones were like getting exposed to air. So like, we got to go lower, right? But I think they're already in danger of that effort. Like they can see the end of that. Like it's not going to last. And so what is Vegas worth without water?
Yes, but one thing that is happening is when we ship in Pepsi and Mountain Dew and Arizona iced tea, that water comes from other places. So when the food and the bottled drinks go into Vegas and then people drink it, they then go to the bathroom, that water stays in that area. So I was reading about how there's more clouds now. And also
I think
lawns.
That's due to the golf courses.
You know, no, probably is. Yeah, you know, no, absolutely.
Evapotranspirating all that water back up into the air. Yep. Again, the AI machine, beep, beep, beep. Don't have golf courses in Vegas, okay?
I disagree, actually.
Just don't do that.
The AI would probably say build golf courses in Vegas to reclaim more desert. Allocating water from areas that have heavy water, like all the rainfall on the East Coast. Look at Florida. You could take a bunch of that water from Florida and send it somewhere else. It rains nonstop.
That's a cool idea, but water's heavy. It's so hard. It takes so much energy to move it.
Have you heard?
But think about the ability to expand the biome and grow more life. The Sahara, for instance. Insane how massive it is. AI would probably be like, you get one person to spit, and you do that 50 billion times, and you're moving fluids and water.
You can also dump that sand back in the ocean.
We are learning how to do agriculture in different ways so that if you actually replicate what we had in the plain structure, where you have like these massive grasslands and then you have these huge herds that come thundering through, you actually create more soil and you retain more water. So we're learning how we can reclaim desert by just running our cows differently. But of course, we're going to grow all our meat in labs now. So
have you seen
solar? I don't know what to do about that anymore.
Solar updraft towers? You have this huge like mile radius circle of like tarp, and in the middle there's a giant tower, and so the sunlight hits the tarp all day, the air rushes towards the tower in the middle and turns these crank turbines and then goes up the tower and out, and it condenses at night, the water condenses down and it starts to grow plant life in the desert.
Sounds like Dune.
Yeah, we could build those all over the place. They're out there.
All right, they're Nathan expensive, though. Zaleski says, hearing Tim say dumb mother effer is like five times on the Bannon members only segment was worth the $10 a month.
That's right.
Glad to know YouTube might be more lax with swearing now. Pissed him is a best him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got mad because I said I know a bunch of dumb mother effers who had no business being involved in politics. Tim, all of a sudden coming out.
Tim's a blue red mage. If you've ever played Magic, he shows you the blue when on YouTube, but he shows you the red on the after show.
Yeah, when we play Magic the Gathering, so it's like chaos and control combined.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever people play games against me, my MO is always to just like make the game really strange. No one can do like I change the rules in weird ways, so the games last for 4 hours, and everyone's like, ugh. They try to do something, and then it backfires, and then there's one that turns their spells into doves, and they got a bunch of 1-1 doves for some reason. Dovescape, by the way. Anyway, Carlo Bighouse says, Dr. Chris Martinson is an American hero. Chris, your videos saved lives. Thank you for having him on, Tim, and continuing to share truth and reason, even while the machine struggles to silence it. You know, there's been, it has gotten a little bit better in some ways. It's pretty bad. But I remember, like, 2 years ago, the censorship was so intense, it was like, man, I almost had a breakdown on several occasions, where, like, a big breaking news story would come out, and I'd be sitting there looking at it being like, I literally can't say any of this New York Times story on YouTube. And so it'd be really frustrating. I'd try to record, and then I'd have to, like, not say certain words because YouTube would just nuke you if you did. And I'm like, I'm reading the New York Times, man. And so then eventually I would turn off the recording and I'd just be like, this is insane, man.
Mm-hmm.
This is insane. We gotta do something.
I got a feeling that censorship, it's not getting worse necessarily. What's happening is it's getting better consistently, but it's up and down as it constantly goes up, like
right.
Evolution. And like, because they used to kill people for speaking out against the church. Like that was the worst thing. Now we're just in a downswing as it jolts up and down, I think, because it's only been like 7 years or something like that.
Well, we do the same thing at my website where, you know, I love being able to talk to lots of people and reach them, but I've had to reserve what I actually think for behind a paywall. Because yeah. I got to keep the trolls out. I don't want Google sort of sniffing it and all that other stuff. And I got to be honest, I you're right. You got me. I love the truth. I just love it. Yeah. And I don't know what the truth is, but man, I can smell BS a mile away. And I can't talk about that as freely as I used to, and that bothers me.
I think it'll come to a point where I'm like, hey, everybody, thanks for joining the show. We're going to sit here in silence for the next hour, and then we'll go to timcast.com. No, but you can't set up a live stream for the purpose of moving everybody to a different show. Hmm. So YouTube bans you for that.
That's weird.
Yeah, like people have made streams where it's like, hey, go watch this stream here on Twitch instead, and then YouTube shuts the stream down and bans you for it. So that won't ever come about. But it will be like, we're going to do a show for about 15 minutes. What's your favorite color?
Blue.
Oh, excellent. Mm. And do you like Arnold Palmer's, the drink?
Yeah.
They're good.
Mm-hmm.
Can we just meditate? Mm-hmm. Then we'll do like a 12-minute meditation.
Are those new glasses?
No, but thank you, Tim. Do you like my glasses?
All right. Brie Anna says, Tim, I would like to know your opinion on John McAfee and Whacked. As well as the reason why several big names in online communities are censoring anything related to it. What's going on? I honestly don't know. I did a video segment about it where his wife came out saying she didn't think he took his own life and he wasn't suicidal or anything like that. I don't know. I've heard a lot of speculation, but nothing I can really say. You know, there's like apparently some crypto Ethereum started moving around or something, or like really small amounts. They think they're NFTs. No idea. I honestly don't know.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything about it really. Nothing to get your arms around.
Woody says, just wanted to mention something about that vitamin C stuff. I looked into carnivore dieting a few years ago, and there was information I discovered showing that we don't absorb as much vitamin C because it competes for the same receptors as carbs. Any thoughts on this? Do you know anything about that?
No, I haven't heard about that one, but it kind of makes sense. So scurvy was a big thing, right? It was awful. Your teeth would fall out. It was really bad. So getting that vitamin C back in was really, really important. Most of that, as far as I'm aware, not coming from meats itself. It's coming from, you know, obviously certain types of fruits and vegetables, things like that. But
this is a big one, actually. Andrea says, so Cuomo's shutdown of Indian Point nuclear power plant was finalized in April 2021. That plant provided 81% of New York's clean energy output. It also provided 19-25% of New York's and surrounding areas' total power. Cuomo promised NYC would be okay without it. Who would have guessed? Yeah, they had power shutdowns. The grid was failing.
It's just magic. You just plug your plug in another outlet on the wall, and it just shows up. It's ridiculous how silly that is. We need these nuke plants badly.
I was talking to an activist once, and this was the craziest thing to me. I was explaining how nuclear power is clean energy. That sure, we should make sure it's safe. No meltdowns. Thorium salt's a big thing. Mm-hmm. Whatever. And the response was, "We don't need any of that. Just plug your computer into the wall." And I was like, right, well, like, sure, but we're talking about coal power plants. Yeah, we don't need any of those. Like, it's like in the wall. I'm not kidding. That was an actual conversation I had.
They had to be joking.
No.
It's like the milk on the shelf.
Yeah.
Oh, my god.
And I was like, you know that there are, like, wires back there, and it all connects to, like, the grid. Uh-huh. And there's a place where they store and produce it. And they were like, no, it's just, I thought it was just, like, there. Wow.
Yeah, no, that's we have some big things to work on. But I would sign up not for these big boiling water nuke plants like they have at Indian Point, all that other stuff. Forget that. These little pebble bed reactors. You know, we have the Voyager spacecraft is out there taking pictures from billions of miles away. It's got a little nuke plant on it, right?
Really?
So these things are
What are they?
They're just a way of they take the heat and they convert it more directly into electricity. You don't have to boil water. So they have these little pebble bed reactors and things like that. And they can fit in the size of a storage container.
What does it do?
It literally takes the energy that's coming out of the nuclear fission process. That creates a lot of heat, and it takes the heat and it converts it into electricity through either a thermoelectric process or some other process, right? Where it's just taking that energy and converting it more directly, right? So you could set these things up, and it would power like 500-600 homes in a neighborhood, right? And it would last for decades.
Is it also uranium?
That is uranium, but I do like you mentioned thorium. I like the lifters a lot. I think we should invest in that technology. We'll probably be buying it from China though, because they're working on it. We're not.
We're gonna do one more because we really want to get to that member segment. So yeah. Stephen Orr says, "Shout from Akron Children's Hospital. Keep the convo flowing. I listen in the AM. Takes my mind off my situation. My son was born 3 months early. Now he is 6 months old and has chronic lung issues. Wizard Crossland.
My friend, I was born in Akron General. My father used to work there as an orthopedic technician. That's my
9 months early, right? That's what I heard.
I was born 9 months early, on demand.
He emerged from a rift in the time-space continuum as you see him now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My mother, my father meditated, and I was born from the ether.
And his being was being formed, Ian's mom was like, "We need more power."
I can't control it.
And the dad was like, "It's not enough. I'm losing it. Don't give up."
And like the other three scientists like got blown back. It's crazy.
Ian was only
in Akron. It's an Akron story.
He was really gaunt with long fingers, and he had gray, scaly skin. And he was like, "What am I?
Earth is."
And they're like, quick, hold him down. And he was thrashing and screaming. And then they gave him shrooms. And then he started to change back to what he is now.
Gosh.
Now you see him as he is.
I've asked him like 5 times not to tell that story.
It checks out, though, doesn't it?
Okay, everybody, smash the like button. Subscribe to this channel. More importantly, go to timcast.com. Become a member. We will have that members-only segment up. Yeah, hopefully around 11, but it might go long because it's going to get intense. Mm-hmm. And you can follow the show at TimCastIRL on Facebook, Instagram, basically wherever else. And we do the show live Monday through Friday at 8 p.m., so we will be back tomorrow. And you can follow me personally at TimCast. Do you want to shout out your channels or anything?
Sure. You can find me at peakprosperity.com. That's my big old website there. Got a great team helping me run that. And check out Chris Martinson, Martenson, at YouTube, at Chris Martinson on Twitter. All over the place.
You do subscriptions on peakprosperity.com?
We do. We have subscriptions. We got a paywall, and we go deep. So anybody wants to actually follow where the data is going, and we got a great community of people.
Oh,
really
nice.
Smart, really curious.
Someone said Ian is a homunculus.
What's the name of the, you got to play magic to get it, I guess. What is that? He's like a little one-eyed.
The homunculus?
Yeah.
Homunculus is an artificial creature created by artificial human made by alchemists.
You know me so well.
Yeah. So your parents were alchemists and they manifested you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. My dad was in the Navy. hey, y'all can follow me at iancrossland.net and at iancrossland on all social media. Thank you for coming.
Did you guys notice the sword behind Ian?
Oh, yeah. This is Link's master sword, is it not?
Wow. Yeah, it's the master sword.
Woo, you can see part of it.
There's a Triforce embedded in the...
We're moving the studio. They're beginning construction tomorrow.
Man, I'm stoked.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's same building. Just the table's going to be attached to the ceiling, not the floor.
Nice.
Yeah, super we're going exciting. Crazy.
Nice. Yeah. I'd love to hear it.
Get on.
You deserve it.
And I'm also in the corner. I was going to say Ian's parents were trying to make gold, and they came up with Ian, which I would say is a pretty good exchange. You guys can follow me at Sour Patch Lids on Twitter as I attempt to gain more followers and Sour Patch Kids.
Go to timcast.com, become a member. The episode will be up at some point tonight. It may go long, and we'll see you all there.
Bye, guys.